Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Not much is happening in Washington. It's been pretty quiet. We did have a certain eminence grise of the Republican Party describe Rand Paul and me as wacko birds. I have to admit, when Rand and I first heard that, we thought maybe that was a new kind of drone. But if standing for liberty and standing for the Constitution makes you a wackabird, then count me a proud wackabird.
On this Palm Sunday, you are live with Tex and Rex. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City.
And this is Tex, broadcasting from Texas once again. Sorry about last week. I was in the Imperial City. I got temporarily detained and was unable to dial in, but I'm back and in pocket. So CPAC happened last week.
Very when you say detained, stuff. you don't mean that you were actually detained by the feds in Washington D.C., do you?
I was sequestered. I was sequestered for a moment. No, that's. They left me alone this time, thank goodness. But, yes, I was there in the Imperial City and got tied up with something and was unable to dial in. But glad that we're revisiting the topic of CPAC because a lot of things happened there that I think are interesting and definitely worth mentioning because I think that really opened up or at least brought out into the public what we have been talking about since well before the election, which is, you know, the House divided against itself, as the founder of our party said, cannot stand. And we've said since, last summer that the establishment, the rhino wing of the party, was trying to tell the rest of the party what to do, sit down, shut up, destroy all our candidates, and push Romney over the top, and that it wasn't going to work, and that there was a something was rotten in the state of Denmark and that the party had a sickness that was manifest as a result, not as a result of, but that was causing the push for Romney. And now that we are out of cycle temporarily, we're the party's in a rebuilding year, it's time that we can sit down and revisit what exactly went wrong and where are we going as a party and how do we prevent these types of catastrophes from happening in the future? Because if the party continues to deny that there is a problem, we can never address the problem and we can never fix the problem and we can never move forward to victory until we're united. And, you know, the way things look, there's a couple ways that, that this could go. One is you fix the party as we did several times before. I think the party was a complete disaster back during after Nixon, and many people thought that that was the end of the Republican Party after Nixon's impeachment resignation. But we came back, and a few years after that, we had Ronald Reagan, and the party was doing better than ever. So it could be fixed, but you have to admit that there's a problem and that it needs to be fixed, or it goes away. It cracks into pieces, and we form a new party, which actually sounds kind of like a fun, exciting thing, and, you know, I'm sort of hopeful that maybe that happens, but we'll see. It's always easier, I think, to take the vessel that you have and to patch it and sail off with that one rather than try to build something up from scratch, but CPAC, I think, really brought to the fore in a way that, I'll be honest, surprised me. The divisions within the party in a very public way, where I thought a lot of this, just given how timid and frightened Washington, D.C. is about having public disputes, where people were just firing broadsides at one another. And I thought, this is great, because, you know, let the healing begin. Because if you can't name names, if you can't say what's been going on, then you're never going to fix anything here. So I thought CPAC was a wonderful exercise in fixing our party and calling out what's been going on that's wrong. So it's kind of a long windup, but I guess I'll turn it back over to you, Rex, and or Tex, and what have we got lined up tonight?
Well, for tonight, we are following up, like you said, on CPAC because, you know, the question is CPAC going to merely be a Republican cheerleading session, or is it going to be the point of the turning point for conservatives to, you know, fight back? And you know, we're running with an interesting theme tonight. Because of, ode to the spaghetti westerns. But, I mean, the simple fact is you got to ask yourself this question. Bitching about Obama is kind of pointless. We know he's dumb. We know he's terrible. We know he's the worst president that this country has ever seen. Even an honest liberal has to acknowledge that Obama sucks. I mean, the worst thing is when, you know, these liberals tell you that they're still anti-war, but they support Obama. Obama's a bigger warmonger than Bush and Cheney ever were. So, you know, that's bad. That's the bad. We know that. And he's here. He's going to be here till 2016. And don't panic that there won't be an election in 2016 or that, you know, he'll get a third term. It's not going to happen. He's gone. They'll find a different puppet. So he's bad. Big deal. The only thing that stands in the way of Obama, the leftist, the collectivist, the socialist, the communist, what have you, is the opposition party. And the opposition party has been appropriated by rhinos. That's why in the last election you got to run a liberal Democrat as your Republican Party nominee. So the real fight is being led by a few wacko birds on the Hill to reclaim conservatism for the Republican Party. And for all of you out there who are fed up with the Republican Party or have never been with the Republican Party, I'm one of them, it's the opposition party up on the national scene. And it will remain that way.
If you're not fed up with the Republican Party, who are you?
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, look, the simple fact is you can ditch the Republican Party, but, you know, then you're abandoning the national scene. And that's just foolish. I'm not saying that, you know, that's the only solution, but for now or for the next few election cycles, it's going to be the Republicans on the federal level. Now, that doesn't mean that at the local level it has to be Republicans. You've got your choices. There's Constitution Party, Libertarian Party, independents, you know, work on your state level, work in your local areas. But nationally, be realistic. It's the GOP. And right now they're a controlled opposition, but there is a faction in the GOP of real conservatives who are making a big splash. And this is going to go either one of two ways. One, it'll be just like the Tea Party. Rah, 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 everything's exciting, and then appropriate, and rhinos will take it over and run it into the ground. Or two, it'll be a resurgence of conservatism. And if we go back to what Tex was talking about, Reagan in 74 told us that it is not a third party that we need, but he wished everybody who wanted to go that way well. He said, what we need is a revitalized second party. And that's what we're seeing now. And from 1974, it took 20 years, an entire generation, until 1994, for conservatism to really make the case and come out on top. And that was the conservative revolution and the contract with America led by Newt Gingrich that brought conservatism to its peak. And that was 1984, with a liberal, democratic, relatively popular president, Newt Gingrich managed to get conservative things done. You like Newt, you don't like Newt, you think he went far enough, he didn't go far enough, he went too far, whatever. The bottom line is that there were four balanced budgets, granted baseline balance, but they were the four closest things you've seen to a balanced budget in 60 years. And that was just the beginning. Now, within 4 years, the rhinos, Bob Dole, John Boehner, Ricky Santorum, Lindsay Lytton, his loafers, Graham, and I would argue even Stale Moss, John McCain, managed to get rid of Newt and bring you Karl Rove's creation, compassionate conservatism, running up
debt. Yeah, they decided they'd had enough of real conservatives. Time to get rid of that crap. 20 years
yeah,
of that, the party's popular. Let's go back to being rhinos.
Exactly. That's what they did. And so you got, you know, compassionate conservatism, foreign adventurism, and that's what delivered Gingrich's majority back to the Democrats in 2006. And that's what delivered the White House to Obama in 2008. It wasn't John McCain. George Bush. Okay? It was Karl Rove that did that. So you got to ask yourself, okay, it took 20 years to get there, and here we are now 20 years later, and they've managed to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory, because Obama was the easiest incumbent to ever beat. 13% less turned out for him, economy, easy to beat, but the Republicans managed to find the one guy that nobody liked. So
yeah.
You can sit there and cry about it, or you can do something about it. And right now, the wacko birds on the Hill are creating a conservative resurgence. And the only thing that will defeat it is if conservatives, libertarians, other constitutionalists and liberty-loving people start nitpicking and fighting with each other about small little quibbly bullshit things and don't lock arms, and then you'll get bowled over. And you won't have conservatism, libertarianism, Christian conservatism, or any of the anti-statist factions get anywhere. Not third parties, not Constitution Party, not Gary Johnson. None of the anti-statist factions will have any toehold, and it'll just be another 2, 3, 4 decades of absolute statism in this country might not survive.
Well,
so get over yourselves and lock arms.
I was across the Potomac from the Gaylord.
Lindsey Graham? Not that
I was going to make that joke. No, it was not Lindsey Graham standing astride the other shore of the Potomac, but yet the convention center that is called Washington, even though it's actually in Maryland and pretty far from D.C. But I was in Alexandria, and over at Daniel O'Connell's, having a pint, and people came in from the Gaylord, from CPAC, and they started talking about the Republicans and why we had lost. And they started going back and forth and saying their normal party bullshit banter that they have practiced and rehearsed And so these people were saying, yeah, well, you know, the problem was Romney's 47% comment. It's like, I know what he meant, but he never should have said it, right? Okay, so the 47% comment, there have been years I have not paid taxes. That doesn't mean I wasn't working. It means that I have a business and my deductions were greater than, you know, the amount of tax that I paid. So am I part of the 47%? Now I'm a taker. Now I don't believe in America anymore. That's what Romney was saying. And then there's the other part of that 47%. People on Social Security who have worked their entire freaking lives, and now they get Social Security, right? They're now takers. They didn't put anything into the system. They're going to get less money out than they paid in. That was the stupidity of the Romney statement. What about people on military pay? They went and fought for the country. Maybe lost limbs, you know, maybe widows, people who died for the country. You know, oh, they're takers. They didn't give anything. That was the stupidity of that statement. But here's somebody trying to defend it saying, I know what he meant, but he never should have said it. Not, that was retarded. And whatever the hell he was thinking is stupid and never should have been said because it's not freaking true. So they're defending him on that level. And then they also said, but his real problem was he got into that primary, and people like Michelle Bachmann and Newt Gingrich and Santorum, they made him too conservative, and so nobody wanted to elect him because everybody saw him as a conservative. At this point, Tex had to disagree, and so I turned to him and I said, nobody, but nobody ever believed that Romney was a conservative. I said, I explicitly voted against him because I wanted to send a message to the party that I would not support this type of candidate in the future, that I never want to see this type of rhino run in our party again, that the age of the rhino is gone, and I won't support them or be voting for them in the future if that's the type of candidate that they run. And I told him I voted Libertarian because Romney was going to win my state anyway, so it's not like I was going to switch the vote over to Obama by mistake. But I said, we needed to send a message to the leadership that we were going to show up and support him. And the guy said, yeah, well, that's true. He did get less votes than McCain. Yes, you ran the guy who lost to the guy who lost to Obama. How is that a winning strategy? Kind of changed their conversation a little bit, started talking with them. But that thinking is still prevalent, which is that this rhino party can still win and that Romney was somehow too conservative. Completely wrong, complete disaster. So you got to combat that mentality if you want to win in the future. And speaking of, another interesting thing that happened while I was over there, on the Rand Paul debate about the drone or the Rand Paul filibuster. Well, the wacko birds would filibuster drone strikes, and this is an unpopular position. This is stupid. It's not going to do anything. It doesn't help out the party. It just makes us look foolish, right? Okay, so I have a Democrat friend over there who used to be a legislative director for a very prominent member of the Democratic House, right? Committee chairman. Anyway, a friend of mine, and we got to talking about various things, social movements, and how they grow and change over time and all this kind of stuff. And he was talking about the Tea Party as well. And so I asked him, well, what do you think about that Rand Paul filibuster over the drone thing? He said, I thought that was awesome because he's been writing about the subject of drones for years. He's like, I thought it was great. I was upset that more Democrats didn't come in and support him because this is something that I care about a lot. Okay,
you're
so
hanging
here
out with
we
John Cusack?
Yes, exactly. Actually, it was. But here you have a party that's saying that it doesn't have broad enough appeal. They come out with a report, which I have a lot of thoughts on this report, a report that just confirms every liberal bias about the report and makes them feel good about why they're Democrats and makes Republicans feel bad about why they're Republicans, you know, in order, I guess, to make the Republican Party seem even more irrelevant and to destroy it even worse than it's been destroyed recently by Karl Rove and the establishment and his ilk. And here we have someone come stand up on the issue of drones and say, hey, look, if you can do drone strikes against American citizens on American soil, then what in the hell is the Constitution about? Why do we even have this thing? What are we protected against? And if it's a matter of debate as to whether or not the government has this authority, then hasn't the government already stepped its bounds, right? That was the purpose of the debate, was to talk about this. are we a free people? Do we have freedom from this type of government overreach, or do we not? And are we willing to stand up and do something about it to protect those freedoms? That's what the debate was about. And, of course, the rhino wing of our party said, well, that's a stupid debate to have. Why would we even talk about that? But yet, there are people across the country, across party lines, who believe the same thing. And if your party is speaking to broader social issues and broader social concerns, it broadens the base of your party and it starts attracting people into your party. And when you attract people into your party, you start winning elections.
What? Republicans actually want to win elections? I mean, are you trying to tell me that Rand Paul's filibuster was standing firm on constitutional principles and a politically savvy tool if you intend to win elections? That's crazy.
Well, no. Actually, I think the Republican Party does not want to win elections at all. I think that they're very happy being the rump party that does nothing most of the time, sits in the background, is very quiet, goes along with the Democrats, pretend they disagree without actually disagreeing about anything, and manages to get some plum assignments, ranking minority leader. That's a great assignment to get because you know what? You don't get a lot of headlines, you don't get a lot of guff, but you get to work with the majority leader and carve out deals for your friends. So, you know, it's kind of playing second fiddle, but if you're a second fiddle, it's not that bad. And I think the Republican Party doesn't really have an interest in winning.
Well, it depends on, I guess, how we define Republican Party, because obviously some Republicans do want to win on principle, and some want to have Priebus just run it into the ground so they can keep their cushy positions. And then we also have to keep in mind something. If over 40% of this country identifies as conservative, you know, how come these people aren't Republicans? Is it possible that the Republican Party has done a shitty job of attracting actual conservatives? I mean, it's phenomenal to me, and I'm glad you bring up the issue of drones, Tex, because this is another one of these things that I see people do. You know, you latch on to the wrong thing. You know, you latch on to to Rand's filibuster about drones, or we latch on to, you know, drones are bad. Well, I mean, drones are just a tool. It's like saying that F-16s are bad or AR-15s are bad or forks are bad. I mean, it's just a tool. There's nothing wrong with the tool. It's a good technology. It's how you use it. And Rand's filibuster was not about drones. It was about the Constitution and about liberty, although I do believe that he said that someone distilled his entire 13 hours into three words. This is the introduction of a CPAC speech. It's just 30 seconds.
I also came with a message for the president, a message that is loud and clear, a message that doesn't mince words. Well, that's not exactly what I was thinking. However, I think he may have distilled my 13-hour speech into three words.
Don't drone me, bro.
Absolutely. I mean, here you have a major issue going in front of the Congress, and they're not talking about it. I mean, this is the Senate, right? So this is the greatest deliberative body on earth. So it claims to be. So it said on the label, so it used to be. And here we have one of the most important issues of our day coming up, because if you have this war on terror, it's a borderless war. How do you define authority? How do you define where the government can act and can't act? What are the limits and the boundaries of this conflict that we're part of? And instead, the Senate's not having a debate at all. And then somebody stands up and has a filibuster in order to ignite the debate, and the party says, oh, well, that's a waste of time. We shouldn't even be talking about that. Why should we not be talking about it? It seems like a pretty freaking important issue. And you know what? If you don't think it's an important issue, what's wrong with you? And second, why don't you get up and explain your side as to why there's no need to be concerned about this? Why don't they do that?
Well, the only reason you don't get up and explain your side is because you have nothing to stand on.
Well, that's right. And that's the problem.
That's a big problem.
That's why I think they didn't like the filibuster.
Well, they didn't, but they certainly jumped on it. I mean, you know, Rubio got tweets and calls, you know, where are you, why aren't you there? Because allegedly, you know, Rubio is this Tea Party conservative darling, and he finally got out there and, you know, was like, me too, guys, I want to play. Can I play with you, Ted and Rand? I'm conservative too. Hollow, spineless, terrible delivery. I mean, you got Ted Cruz quoting, you know, Shakespeare, St. Crispin's Day speech, and he's quoting from Patton and the Bible, and then Rubio comes up and quotes from the Godfather and Jay-Z. I mean, who is Jay-Z? This guy? You know, and then, of course, at the very end, Mr. McConnell comes in and, you know, jumps in on it because, let's face it, what state is Mitch McConnell from? Oh, that's right, Kentucky, where Rand is from. So, you know, Mitch is in trouble if he doesn't talk libertarian conservative. But listen, everybody in Kentucky, bluegrass state, don't buy his bullshit. Ditch Mitch. He's not a conservative. He doesn't like Rand Paul. He's not interested in the Constitution. Get rid of him and get a better senator. It is absolutely up to you people in Kentucky.
Some of his best friends are Rand Paul. Oh, speaking of, I saw earlier that there was the Ryan budget, which apparently is so radical that they're talking about it on the news. Like, why is Obamacare, why are they talking about eliminating Obamacare? That makes the thing a complete joke, right? Well, you know what makes it a complete joke? It doesn't balance the federal budget in our lifetime. It's a complete, it's just kicking the can down the road. It was just complete window dressing on Paul Ryan's part. To go out and state that's his, you know, this is going to be my budget. I'm Paul Ryan. I ran with Romney. And also, his poll numbers are way the hell down. Ever since he ran with Romney, he's gone straight down. They're like, oh, why is Paul Ryan no longer the darling of the conservatives or of the base? Well, I have a great idea. It's because, as you and I said last summer, Paul Ryan decided that he didn't want to be part of the Republican Party or national politics anymore once he associated himself with Mitt Romney.
Well,
but then you look at
that's not nice. You're being mean. I mean, it's true. We did point out that Paul Ryan absolutely killed his career by latching his wagon to Karl Rove's monster's train. We knew that, but you know, you're being mean. I mean, you're saying that it doesn't balance the budget and all this stuff. I mean, give the guy some credit. Last time he introduced the budget, it was allegedly going to balance the budget in 28 years. This time he's doing it in 10. I mean, why?
That's great.
So, you know, so he shaved 18 years off his bullshit budget. That's something to be commended.
And
there will only be
five congresses between now and then who have completely different ideas, and so essentially it will never balance a budget.
Right. And let me ask you this. How long is a congressman's term before he's up for reelection?
Two years.
Right. And the congressman with extended terms that we call senators, how long is their term?
Six.
Okay. So let's see. Paul Ryan proposes a budget that allegedly balances the budget in 10 years, which would require that he reelected five times to see it through. If I'm not mistaken, Senator Rand Paul introduced a budget that balances, and actually balances, in half that time, 5 years. And his term is six. Isn't that interesting?
Well, interesting. Yes, it is. And let's not bury Paul Ryan because he's busy doing that himself. Let's talk about Rand Paul. So he proposed a budget that balances in 5 years, eliminates the Department of Commerce, cuts the budget down. And interestingly, if you look at who voted for it, one of the people who voted for it was Mitch McConnell. Really? Mitch McConnell is this unknown deficit hawk, apparently. Well, here's the problem with Mitch McConnell. He's up for re-election in 2014, and he's scared out of his wits because people are talking about running a primary challenger to this guy. Please run a primary challenger to this guy. So now,
wait,
all of a sudden, he's got religion.
Wait a minute. So McConnell is afraid of getting attacked from the right, and so now he's shifting right? That's crazy talk.
And this also
doesn't he have Karl Rove to defend? Where's Karl Rove? Why is Karl Rove defending Mitch McConnell?
That's why Mitch McConnell glommed on and started suckling at the teat of Karl Rove when Karl Rove announced his conservative kill pack, the Conservative Victory Fund, which was, we're going to eliminate these radical Tea Party people before they show up even in primaries. And Mitch McConnell was like, oh, that's great, because, you know, now I'm going to have a close primary because I've been a douchebag for my entire career. And now I'm afraid that I could lose my position just like Dick Lugar did.
You know, Tex, you bring up something really interesting. What year was that Mitch McConnell's up for re-election?
2014.
Okay, and it's currently 2013, right? So,
yes,
so when you're trying to tell, what you're telling me, and this is probably a revelation to most people, so I want you to really pay attention. What you're telling me is that 2014 is next year, and it comes before 2016? I don't think most people know that, because, you know, every time I talk about or write or post or do anything regarding Rand Paul, you know what I get? Do you really think he'll be a good president? Why are you supporting him for president? Don't we have several elections between now and 2016? So I think 2014 is considerably more important. Now, if I'm not mistaken, we stagger our senatorial elections, so therefore McConnell's up for re-election in 2014, but Rand Paul is not, right?
Absolutely, he's not.
So why would you be so interested in Rand Paul? I mean, who is he? Oh, I don't know. He's just one of 100 senators. Happens to be the guy leading the charge on the Hill for conservatism, for constitutionalism, for liberty. So, you know, maybe y'all should think about getting on the Rand Paul bandwagon without giving any concern for 2016. The guy hasn't even talked about running in 2016 yet.
Well, if you're concerned that Rand Paul is not somehow a standard traditional type conservative, Karl Rove recently said that he's helped Rand Paul get elected and that he wants to see more Rand Pauls. So if you're
bullshit,
have establishment leanings, you should be getting on that Rand Paul bandwagon, because no more establishment of person than Mitch McConnell is now flailing away, grasping on to anything, and apparently now has fingernails under Rand Paul to help save his career. I was looking this up. In 2008 was Mitch McConnell's last election. He defeated a Democrat named Bruce Lunsford in the general election. So, yes, he is up for re-election in 2014.
Wow. So what Mitch McConnell is going to do now is try to paint himself as an elder statesman in the mold of Rand Paul, and I'm supposed to believe this? Don't buy it, people. Listen, if you know anybody in Kentucky, if you live in Kentucky, if you've driven through Kentucky, if you've gone to the races, if anything that touches on Kentucky, get busy and let people know to ditch Mitch. He is a very, very dangerous man. And, Tex, speaking of dangerous men, we are joined by a very dangerous man. He carries a big club. Captain Caveman, you are live with Tex and Rex.
Gentlemen, how you guys
doing? Hey, how's it going, Trog?
Good, bud. How you doing?
Doing good. Thank you for filling in my shoes last week. I gave Rex a heads up and said that things were going to be complicated for me. And to get in touch with you, I was going to try to dial in. I was unable to. So I listened to the show. You guys did a great job, and thanks for filling my shoes.
No, no problem. I appreciate that I'm on the list to do that. I love this conversation, guys. I love it. I'm telling you, people don't get it. They get all. I see this divide. You know, this Rand and Rubio, and you know, Rand is this, and you know, and he's being attacked 24/7 in the news every time that he puts anything out there. You know, and this guy is like, I don't know, you'd think he was a medical doctor or surgeon or something. He is so calm. But what people don't understand, I keep trying to explain this, and Rex, you said it perfectly, 2016 is after 2014. Right now what Rand is doing is he planted the flag and said, we are still here. We are the Tea Party movement. We are the Liberty movement, and we're still here. We're still fighting. And we're still making sense, and we still care, and we haven't sold our soul, you know, to the political, you know, rhino game. And that's what's important. 2016 will take care of itself. You know, there's going to be a bunch of people fielded, and somebody's going to win, and a bunch of people are going to lose, you know, and become the nominee. You know, that's another issue. You know, so whether or not you you are Rand or Rubio or whoever, Ryan or, you know, whatever your choice is, Christie, and even Santorum got some points at CPAC, which kind of surprised me, but I guess it didn't. But, you know, the thing is that they're all going to run. But right now, the only guy fighting tooth and nail, taking all the bullets, is Rand Paul. I mean, it everywhere you turn, you know, the guy is standing up and he's saying, we need to deal with immigration. We need a real budget. We need to quit playing accounting games. You know, we need to move on this issue. We need, you know, somebody's got to fight for our Bill of Rights. You know, the drone, of course, was not about drones. It was about everything coming out of the Patriot Act and 9/11. And this guy's willing to, you know, to stand up there and take the crap. Everybody else got quiet, and they're just
absolutely watching.
It just pisses
me off, bro.
Well, and Chris, it's a long game, though, that they're playing, because the establishment's saying, okay, well, everybody likes Rand. He's their new hero. They like the Ted Cruz guy. So let's put them out front while we sit in the background, and we show this is the public face, you know, the Republican Party now. We'll send them out front, and then we're going to give them enough rope, and then we're going to hang them with it should Rand Paul have any presidential aspirations in 2016. Because I don't know if you've noticed, but that Jeb Bush drumbeat, do you hear that every now and then? A little in the background?
God.
You just hear
I just threw up a little in my mouth.
Yeah. But it's coming back. And you keep hearing it, and you keep seeing his face. You keep seeing Marco Rubio, and you'll see it paired with Jeb Bush all the time. You know why? Marco Rubio is from Florida, and Jeb Bush sort of runs the Florida political machine. And so either Jeb Bush wants to run in 2016, or the idea is to make Marco Rubio look like a better alternative than Jeb Bush. But this party, seriously, if it wants to self-destruct, if it wants to just completely fall apart, Karl Rove should work his magic to force Jeb Bush to be the nominee in 2016, and Jeb Bush will get something like 10% of the fucking vote.
He'll single-handedly he'll Ryan Rubio. What do you mean, Rex? What do you mean Ryan Rubio? I mean that, you know, Rubio will go the way of Ryan. He'll go on the bottom of the ticket. It'll go down in flames, and he'll become a joke just like Paul Ryan is now. But here's the interesting thing. Just watch it, because Rubio is a tag-along Me Too wannabe, and he's going to keep tagging along and trying to play with the wacko bird big dogs, Cruz and Rand Paul, and then they're going to use Rubio in 2016 to take Rand out. Because, you see, when you start seeing the establishment get behind Rand, just keep in mind something. They realized, because of what happened in 2012 and what happened in Tampa, they were like, oh, crap, these young libertarian kids that are being influenced in their college dorms by Rand Paul and, you know, all these wacko birds, we kind of need their numbers to win, but we don't want to do what they want to do. So let's get behind their guy rhetorically and keep, you know, beating his votes. Because, I mean, let's face it, the amendment that he wrote to the budget, with 18 senators voted for it?
Yeah.
I mean, come 18. On. Okay, so the whole country wants something like that, and only 18 of these jerk-offs that allegedly represent us voted for it. So they're going to keep letting him have this rhetorical high ground to create a moment, and then what they'll try to do is trip him up in 2016. How can they do that? Oh, I don't know. What did they do to his dad in Tampa?
Mm-hmm.
So watch him. Watch Rubio.
Well, But, I mean, what has Marco Rubio done? That's always been my question. Like, oh, Marco Rubio, he's so great. What is it that Marco Rubio has done? I mean, I think the biggest challenge to Marco Rubio and his claim on being this presidential contender in 2016 is Ted Cruz. Because they always say that, Marco Rubio is this Tea Party darling that the Tea Party loves because he defeated Charlie Crist, right?
Yeah.
Karl Rove backed Charlie Crist, right? Charlie Crist, when he lost that election, became a Democrat. Okay, so Marco Rubio beat a Democrat in the Republican primary, a Democrat who shouldn't have been in there in the first place. Who had a hand in putting him in there? Oh, I don't know. So he wins, And now he's the Tea Party darling. And now because, oh, well, he's Cuban-American, you know, he's going to appeal to the Latino vote. Okay, great. Well, maybe you can make that claim, right? But that's the only thing that I've ever heard that this guy did that was so great that made him this next claim to claim it to the throne, if you will. Then
yeah.
you have Ted Cruz,
well,
who's a real Tea Party darling, who defeated
yeah.
David Dewhurst down here in Texas, who's also Cuban-American. But they don't talk about that. They don't like him. You know why? Because Ted Cruz is an actual, real, honest-to-God conservative, and that's the last thing the Republican establishment wants to see. And that, my friend,
another one?
Why you
not
should
another
not
one.
Trust Marco Rubio. I don't trust the guy. I don't know him personally. He seems like a nice guy. But
right.
he seems like he's being groomed, and if he's being groomed, yep. that means he can be managed, and if he can be managed, he can be manipulated, and if he can be manipulated, that means he's under someone else's control. And I know the people who control things in the Republican Party, and I don't like them, and therefore I don't trust Marco Rubio.
Right.
Well, he's not trustworthy, but, you know, this is an interesting thing because, you know, what these – the CLEC, as Pat Caddell excellently called it, and we talked about that last week, the consultant – lobbyist establishment complex, you know, they get their numbers and they get their charts and they have their meetings on K Street and they, you know, what's, well, how did we lose and what happened? And they, well, look at the demographics, you know, Romney didn't do well amongst women and Asians and Latinos and
he didn't do well
amongst
anybody.
Yeah, he didn't do well amongst basically. No, you're right.
You.
You're right. But I mean, they, you know, so they put these numbers together. And they go, how are we going to appeal to these people? Well, we need to appeal to Latinos. They're a growing part of the population. And apparently Latinos, and of course, you know, this is also true for blacks, women, young, whatever, they don't have any kind of aspirations under the Constitution. Their aspirations are determined by their genitalia and their skin color and their ethnic background. At least that's the way the Republicans, you know, consultants seem to view it. So if you want to appeal to Latinos, you have to have a Latino candidate because that's how people will vote, which makes you wonder how Barack Obama got elected, because if every single black person in the country voted for Barack Obama and nobody else did, he wouldn't win. You know, Barack Obama won because white people voted for him. So this whole thing is really stupid. This is Democrat identity politics, and the Republican establishment is falling for it. And so
Marco
the only
Rubio
time they
understand that's how Jay-Z sells his albums, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the white suburban kids are buying Jay-Z's albums. but, you know, the real stupid thing is, you know, what's important, you know, immigration policy. Well, why is immigration policy important to Latinos? The only reason it's important to Latinos is if they have relatives who are in South America who they want to bring here, right? Otherwise, the only thing that's important to them is low taxes, local autonomy, good schools, you know, a safe country, you know, an opportunity to start your own business or get an education, get a job. These are what's important to them. But the only thing we talk about is immigration. You know, and of course, for the most part, what we're talking about
it's
is illegal immigration, people coming across the border without walking in through the front door. So then you got these two extreme camps. You've got people who are like, we're going to totally shut down the borders. Now, I happen to fall into that camp because when you have 25% of your population unemployed, you don't need to invite people in. Fix the jobs numbers, and then by all means, we want the best and the brightest from all over the world to come. But right now, 25% of Americans are out of work, which means your unemployment expense, which is just putting us further in debt, is huge. Your welfare expense is huge. And until you fix that, you really can't bring more people in. But nevertheless, something has to be done. And Newt Gingrich talked about it in the last primary, where, you know, what are you going to deport somebody who's been here for 25 years, who goes to your church, who pays taxes, who lives in your community, and you're just going to ship them back?
Children,
I mean, that's insane.
Whose children are legal if they were born here, too?
And even if they weren't legal, their kids, let's just say, you know, it depends on how you interpret the 14th Amendment, if their kids came here when they were one or they were born here, these kids are American. You should back, quote, home, and they're going to be foreigners in their own country, allegedly. So this
take
is
them
cruel.
Back.
Well, and remember,
right. You can't do that.
Remember when Gingrich announced his plan,
talking
about that was one of the first things they pounced on. They're like, see, Newt Gingrich could never be president of the country because he's talking about this thing. What he's talking about is amnesty, because they were so rabid, and by they I mean Karl Rove, so rabid to tar Newt Gingrich with anything in order to get him out of the primary. They seized on this in order to get rid of him because, you know what? Karl Rove That wasn't in his playbook. He hadn't thought of that one. And so they're like, get rid of Gingrich. Look what he's doing. Get rid of Gingrich. It's so bad. You know, this is so negative. And now they're saying, hey, you know, we need to look at ways to find some sort of immigration plan that might work. Well, Gingrich had one, and you shit all over him. And you know what? Gingrich could be president right now. We could have a balanced budget, and this country wouldn't be listing off into the darkness and the ship of state about to turn over and freaking capsize, all because Karl Rove thinks it's more important that Karl Rove be the most important person in the Republican Party than that the United States continue on and be successful, and that we all have a rising tide, and that we're a prosperous country.
Yep.
Instead,
and who did they use? Who did they use to beat Newt? Who did they use to beat Newt? Oh, that's right, Marco Rubio.
Yeah.
Marco Rubio, who's allegedly a Spanish speaker, mistranslated Newt Gingrich's Spanish language ad in Florida to paint Newt Gingrich as evil on immigration, and that's was the turning point for Romney in Florida. So, you know, when we say we don't trust Marco Rubio, I definitely don't trust him, because if he, in fact, is a Spanish speaker, then he got firsthand knowledge of that ad, and he lied about Newt Gingrich to help Mitt Romney. And if you were helping Mitt Romney in the last election, you were killing conservatism, and you were ensuring a Barack Obama reelection, and that puts you on the enemy's list. Let's take a real quick break, gentlemen. We'll do some housekeeping, and then we're going to – well, you know, we'll do the housekeeping on the other side of this. But real quick, this is it's Rand Paul. I'm loath to play this because of where it comes from. It comes from Fox News. Chris Wallace, Fox News Sunday. And Wallace, who I thought was a fair-minded journalist, revealed his bias, the way he treated Newt in the primary and the way he treated Rand Paul in the primary. But nevertheless, I'm more interested in Rand Paul than I am in Chris Wallace, and here is Rand Paul answering Chris Wallace's question on the subject we're talking about, immigration.
Stand about immigration, because you came out with your ideas for a comprehensive plan this week, and since then you're taking fire from both the right and the left. You call your plan for creating a legal status, not citizenship, but a legal status for the 11 million folks who are already here, illegal immigrants who are already here. But you're taking fire from the right because you oppose the E-Verify system, which would make it easier for employers to check whether their workers are in fact legal or illegal. Why would you oppose that?
Well, that's not the main part of my plan. The main part of my plan is Trust But Verify, that says we have to have border security. Conservatives have always wanted border security before we had immigration reform. The amendment that I will add to the bipartisan plan will ensure that there is border security and that Congress gets to vote on that border security every year in order for it to go forward. With regard to E-Verify, it's not that I'm opposed to some sort of database check. For example, when you come into the country, I think the country should do a background check on you to find out if you're a felon or if there's a problem. I also think that, those who come in and get a work visa should be in a database, and that when someone applies for welfare, it should be mandatory that they look at that database to make sure you're not here on a work visa, which means you're not eligible to vote and you're not eligible to get welfare. So I'm not against any kind of checking. I just would prefer the government to be the policeman and not the businessman. It's kind of where it happens, whether it happens and the businessmen have a lot more expenses to do this or whether the government should do it.
Let's talk about your idea, which is very important to you, that it should be Congress. According to the Gang of Eight plan, it would be governors and a commission. They would decide whether or not the border is secure. You want Congress to get into this. And there are some Republicans who say you're setting up the GOP for a fall because it'll be a vote in Congress. It'll be very political. A lot of Republicans will say, well, gee, we're not satisfied with border security. And that'll only increase their sense of separation from Hispanic voters.
I would argue the opposite. I would argue that you're only going to get the conservatives, particularly a Republican House, to pass immigration reform if we as conservatives are reassured that the border is controlled and that we get to vote on whether the border is controlled. We have not believed in the past that the promises came true. In 1986, when we normalized folks, they said, oh, you'll get border security, and a lot of us feel like it never happened. That has soured the debate for 20-some-odd years now. So the only way you get this forward, I think my Trust But Verify actually will bring the House along. No immigration reform is going to happen unless Republicans in the House sign on to it, and I don't think they'll sign on to it unless you get something like what I'm talking about. And it would include governors as well, would include Border Patrol, Investigator General, and it would have a matrix of things such as how many people are being captured, how many people with felons are being turned away, that kind of thing, and then Congress would vote on it. The main reason I don't want the president just to stamp it is I don't really trust any president, Republican or Democrat, to do a good enough job to say the border is really secure. Every representative should get to vote on that.
It's a showdown, and it looks like Rand brought a couple of six shooters. I'm going to let you guys
show down this one real quick.
Yeah, I just want to point out real quick, number one, the first thing he says is he identifies himself as a conservative. So you libertarians that think that he's a traitor to his dad, well, he's a conservative. And guess what? So was Ron Paul. And to you conservatives that think, oh, my goodness, he's a pot-smoking libertarian, he's identifying as a conservative and speaking as a conservative. And then he also pointed out the fact that he doesn't trust anybody with too much power from either party. And his view of bipartisan is working on solutions, not working on self-aggrandizing each other to destroy the Constitution. Anyway, I want to go to Tex first, and then we'll hop over to Trugs. I know you got some good points on immigration.
Well, I just want to say that at the CPAC event, it became quite clear that there's a house cleaning coming in effect for the Republican Party, and that clarity is being brought to all these issues. I think everything is coming out into the light, and all the problems of the party are being exposed, and this is the best way for the party to go about fixing itself and to correcting what ails us. And I, for one, am very happy to see it.
All right, Chris, go for it.
Okay, couple different points. Very good, Tex. A couple different points. One is immigration reform is not about getting votes. It's about solving a problem. We have 11 million people, 8 million, whatever, depends on who you talk to, because they have had record deportations. It's really interesting that, you know, they're always beating up on Obama over the border, and yet he has record deportations. So, you know, nobody's telling the truth on this situation, but you also have the Dreamer kids, you know, kids who were brought here very young. You also have immigration, illegal aliens, all right, were part of the legal immigration system to a tune of over 40% of them. I've done a massive amount of research into this. I didn't even want to get involved in it, because I didn't think Republicans, I figured they were going to roll over and do something weak and we'd get screwed just like Reagan did. But when Rand jumped into it, I started, you know, I started doing more research, and I've actually studied the whole immigration, you know, history of this country, even pre-revolution, you know, what Britain did and stuff. But what people don't understand is when 9/11 hit, you know, these 40% of the people who came here legally, the system failed them. It is amazing that nobody wants to talk about some of the important issues behind the scenes. These aren't all a bunch of evil people that just came here, you know, trying to take over America and destroy America and come here just to get on welfare. There's a lot of people who came here, millions of them, came here legally to better their lives, to get involved, you know, in college. And when 9/11 hit, the whole system fell apart. And all of a sudden, these people became, a lot of them became illegal at that point. What the hell were they going to do? You know, there's a lot of them were in college, and all of a sudden, you're not supposed to be here anymore. But another point that people don't understand is that it's not a felony. It's a misdemeanor to cross that border. And the reason that law was built that way is because it was quicker to be able to process them than kick them back over the border. There's so many parts of
immigration. I think it's a felony if you go the other way, though.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. And a side point, the Mexicans are you know, we think about Rubio as being a Cuban. They don't really get along, because the Cubans have had special treatment on immigration issues forever, so there's not a lot of love lost between Mexicans and Cubans. But here's an important factor in this whole thing, and this is the way I viewed it, is we have a problem that needs to be solved. And the guy who comes to the table and solves the problem, because every year Democrats use the Republican position as a biased, as a bigoted attitude against people who are trying to come here and better their life. Yeah, we got criminals. Yeah, we got scumbags coming across the border. Solve the border issue. But this whole immigration policy I don't know if anybody has ever taken the time to research how hard it is to even to get here and then go through each step of the way, whether it's a work visa or a student permit, and then go to a green card or go to a permanent work situation. The steps it takes for immigration is a real nightmare. It's very expensive. It's very corrupt. And that's something that Newt brought up was, you know, he talked about that work visa program. Nobody wants to talk about that, and it's pretty dynamic, and it's driven by economics, because if you look at our immigration policy, it used to be driven by what does the country need, and then it became a chain migration where if one person showed up, then, you know, the whole damn family came behind them, and that wasn't always good for the country. And that was changed. Congress changed that procedure. So this is a very deep, serious problem. And nobody, and I've said this for years, nobody's going to deport these people. Bush didn't do it. He didn't secure the damn border when he had power. You know, it isn't a left-right problem. It's an American problem. It's a human being problem. The Democrats don't want a solution because the unions don't want this workforce to be legal and competing against them. Sorry, Tex, go ahead.
Thanks. And, Rex, sorry, I was reading something when you passed it to me, and I realized you passed it to me to talk about the immigration issue. What Rand Paul was saying is right, which is, look, you got to close the border first if you're going to have immigration reform, because otherwise you're just going to have wave after wave of people that you keep saying, okay, well, everybody here now, it's okay, and, you know, you're free to go, and that's going to encourage more of this, and which essentially is just overwhelming, you know, the population of the United States with people just coming in, and you're constantly giving them amnesty. Now, the thing is, this is how America started. People came in and they became citizens and everything was okay, but it's different when you have a welfare state, because when you have a welfare state, there's all these transfer payments going on.
That's right.
And it will sink the country economically to have people coming in all the time and then going on to welfare systems and that sort of thing, because there's not the taxpayers to pay for it. Yeah, exactly, or Obamacare, because people who are here illegally exist outside the income tax system that pays for a lot of these stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if they exist outside the system, they're not paying into it.
Nice shooting, Tex.
You know.
Then they're not paying into it. And that becomes a problem. So there's a couple ways you could deal with it, one of which is eliminate the welfare state to begin with, which isn't necessarily a bad idea in itself, but it's kind of hard to do. And the other is then that you have to have border security in order to assure that waves and waves of immigrants don't come in and overwhelm your welfare state's ability to pay for the benefits that people need. And so, once again, liberals have started the fire and they're selling you the water. They created the welfare state. It's an unmanageable system. It will bankrupt any country that adopts these things. I mean, look at what's happening to Europe right now. Look at where Europe was 100 years ago in terms of their, you know, their wealth and economy, and where they are today, and they started, that's where the welfare state began. They were doing great, and then they started adopting all the socialist crap, and now we're exporting our inflation to them, and we're just screwing over Europe, and they're sinking their yesterday's news, and Asia is rising. So, once again, thank you, liberals, for not thinking your policies through. And, you know, this thing's killing us. So with immigration reform, you've got to close the border, and then you can start looking at people who have been here for years, who have been contributing, and how you want to handle that, and to give them work visa programs so that they can get in and they can become citizens. But it's no good if you do that and then just allow another wave to come in and overwhelm the wave that came before it.
Oh, nice shooting, Tex.
Right on. I think you know, I don't know that the liberals haven't thought it through. That's the only thing I'm going to pick a bone with you on, because I think they did think it through, and this is exactly what they want, because they want to destroy the constitutional republic because they want a totalitarian state.
Yeah.
And so I think that this is part of it. Now, here's the thing, though. You nailed it so well when you said because of the welfare state and the transfers. And this is what's important for everybody to understand, and you need to spread this information. This has to go out to everybody. Ron Paul said that he started an intellectual revolution. You know, I don't believe that Dr. Paul ever truly wanted to be president or ever had any belief that the Rhinos were even going to allow him to become the nominee. But he wanted to start something. And if you're not picking up his mantle and running with it, then you're on the other side. Okay? And this goes out to you conservatives. Okay? Because Ron Paul was a conservative Republican congressman. He was not a libertarian, as in the large capital L party libertarians who have some strange epistemological ideas about reality that don't really jive well with conservatives. However, they're not our enemies like the liberals are, who want everything to be in the state. Now, I have my problems with the libertarian philosophy, okay? But remember, again, you got to break this down. There's political libertarianism, economic libertarianism, and social libertarianism. Our founding fathers were, at minimum, deists, mostly nominal Christians, were very faithful Christians, and that was their social view and their structure. However, economically and politically, they were libertarians, and the word libertarian is a misnomer. It is actually classical liberal. But since the progressives stole the word liberal, we had to come up with another one, and it's libertarian. Now, where you have an overlap between, quote, libertarians and, quote, conservatives is on political and economic libertarianism. That means federalism, diffusion of power, and free markets. That's where you build the ground. That's where you find agreement. That's where you lock arms. And then these people, these founding fathers and their genius, gave us this wonderful tool called 50 state legislatures, even though they didn't give us all 50 of them right up front, and a bicameral Congress so that we can have these other debates. If you want to have those debates between conservatives and libertarians now, the left wins. So stop having those stupid debates. Focus on the common ground, economic and political libertarianism, and let's displace the statist agenda. Now, what Tex said brilliantly was you got to end the welfare state. And that actually solves almost all the problems we're facing, from immigration, because guess what? If there's no freebies, the only people that would be coming to this country are people who are invited by, say, I don't know, Walt Disney or the Marriott Corporation, or invited to come here and get a job, or they come here to work, okay, or to build a business, which is all good stuff. But they don't come here for free crap because there is no free crap. That's the problem. Guess what? It also eliminates this entire problem that we're having now with this whole, quote, gay marriage thing. Because if you don't have all these benefits and all these tax breaks and all this kind of stuff, it's not going to be an issue. So the welfare state is causing most of these problems, and guess what? You're focused on these problems instead of on the core root of the problem. And, of course, the flip side of the welfare state is the warfare state. If you're going to go abroad looking for monsters to slay, then you're going to engender and breed tyranny at home. And so that's kind of where you have to focus. So what you need to do, okay, and we're going to get back to the conversation and listen more to Rand Paul. What you need to do is you need to get this information out to people who are either A, libertarians, okay, who are focused on something like, oh, I don't know, marijuana prohibition or gay marriage, all right? Stupid issues to be focusing on. The country is in debt and we are losing our rights. And this is what you focus on? Get off that and go out to the social conservatives who are focused on gay marriage and, say, abortion. Now, I'm 100% pro-life. It's an important issue to me. For 40 freaking years, you've been voting for Republicans, and you haven't gotten one thing done. Try another strategy, because children are dying, and you're sitting here saying, we're going to make it, we're going to overturn Roe v. Wade. No, you're not. Not at the federal level, you're not. So get active locally, okay? And then go out to conservatives who are concerned about national defense and security and explain to them that the best defense you can have is a stable economy, because soon enough we're going to be so broke you can't pay your soldiers. And just ask the any of the medieval kings or the Roman emperors, Tex, what happens when you don't pay your soldiers? They'll turn on you, okay? So, you know, that's what you have to think about. So these are the things that you bring people together on. Ending the welfare warfare state unites everybody. Ending the Fed unites everybody, including people, say, who might be Occupy Wall Streeters, Okay? So that's how you have to focus on it. How you do that? Well, guess what? You go to our Facebook page, the Tex and Rex Show on Facebook, or Chris's page, Coalition of Freedom, and get linked up with other people who are doing this and share information. Don't post news of the day and garbage like that, but real focus on building coalitions of like-minded people who love liberty. You can join our Tex and Rex's Liberty Militia. It's also on Facebook, and links are in the Blog Talk Radio chat. Listen to these shows. We're not everybody's cup of tea, but this is important information that has to get out there. And you can actually download this show as an MP3 by clicking download, you know, right-clicking on the link, MP3, send it out to people in email, give it to them as a CD, burn a CD. They're not expensive. Burn a CD when you go to, you know, any of the rallies or tea parties or anything else, you know, hand it out and get active locally. Share this information with people at the ground level, not just on Facebook and Twitter, although that's great. Please do that. But you got to go. Go to the local Tea Party meeting, Campaign for Liberty, Constitution Party, Libertarian Party, heck, in some areas, maybe even the Republican Party might actually be conservative. So get this information out there and unite people, because if we don't get this done now, 2014 will be a disaster. Chris or Tex, you guys want to follow up on that, and then we'll listen to more Brand?
Go ahead, Tex. Did we lose him? No, I totally agree with what you're saying. I'll run with it.
Thank you for unmuting me. Yes, I got disconnected.
Okay.
Yeah, I was
you got disconnected.
Yeah. Sorry, the call got dropped. I was going to say on the foreign policy issue that one of the things we talked about earlier is how Bill Kristol believes that Barack Obama created Rand Paul. Oh, that is damning praise if ever there was, because Barack Obama, by not explaining how important the Afghanistan war is today to the American people, it created a group of people who are interested in getting out of Afghanistan, which we should not be doing, apparently. I would say that's not really the case. I would say that Ron Paul created Rand Paul, and I'm not talking about just in a biological sense, but in an intellectual sense, which is that the country's out of money, we're overspending, we're going bankrupt by spending the amount of money that we are, and part of that is by the warfare state, which you talked about. So we talked a little bit about the welfare state. Now let's talk about the warfare state. Going overseas, seeking monsters to destroy. And I don't think we're getting anything out of Afghanistan. And by the way, you can't turn Afghanistan into a successful state. It has no history of that. It's not a desirable thing for us to do. And I don't think it's possible for us to do it. You can't impose that from the outside. You can't tell a bunch of people that you have to be a successful state because we say so, and here's some money to encourage you to build these social institutions. That can't be done from outside. That's something internal. People have to come together and build that stuff on their own. So Afghanistan, everybody knows why we went in there in the first place. That mission is done. It's time to get the hell out of there and forget about it. Like, well, we can't have that place become a haven of terrorism again. Okay, I agree. But how did it become a haven of terrorism in the first place? Osama bin Laden was in the Sudan, he got on an airplane, and he flew from Sudan to Afghanistan. Bill Clinton was contacted by the military and said, Osama bin Laden's on a plane, and we can shoot him down. Is it okay if we do that? And the Clinton administration said no. Okay? So how about this? In the future, just say yes. Just shoot the plane down, and then you don't have to go invade Afghanistan for the next 10 years and send all these Americans over there to go die and spend blood and treasure in that godforsaken hellhole. Don't let it happen in the future. So I would not blame, or I would not say that Barack Obama caused Rand Paul. The fact that we've been over there for all these years, the Bill Clinton and his inactivity on the war on terror helps lead to this. George Bush and sort of the whole idea that we're going to invade every single failed state on planet Earth so that it doesn't become a home of terrorism created Rand Paul. Or created an intellectual environment that made Ron Paul's arguments make sense. The absurdity of the neoconservative agenda, which is that we will maintain order on all of planet Earth, is what created Rand Paul, because that's an absurd idea.
Well, and it goes beyond that. You know, we're toppling all the governments we built. I mean, come on, folks. You know, I cannot believe that people can't read history. We built this world empire. We funded them. We trained them, including a lot of stuff in Afghanistan. And now we're toppling them and filling them back up with all the people who we just fought for the last 10 years. Excuse me? There's got to be a point in time where people, neocons.
That's good management.
You know, it's continual warfare. You were talking about going around the world looking for enemies. We build them. We fund them. We train them. I mean, we fund, you know, everybody, you know, you look at Israel. We give money to their enemy, and then we got to give money to them. Then we give money to the enemy on the other side. Then we got to give more money to them. And everybody says, you know, loves to say that Rand Paul is anti-Israel, which is bullcrap. And he was over there, and I actually listened to some interviews with some people who traveled there with him. And he said, wouldn't it be nice if we did our thing with you, backed you, and got out of your damn way and let you deal with stuff? You know, which is something that is amazing that does not happen. We are playing everybody against everybody. And I don't even mean to say we, because it isn't me. I don't agree with it. You know, if somebody attacks this country or attacks our interests overseas, go blow the crap out of them and then go, okay, do it again. We'll be back and we'll blow you up again. And then come home and quit playing these games around the world. This is all a monster chess game that we're playing. It has nothing to do with human rights. It has nothing to do with religion. It's all economics. Follow the money. We're going to have an endless war in Africa here pretty soon. Because all the world powers are moving.
We've already got one. We're in Mali already, in Libya.
Yeah, we're moving.
Those are both
in Africa. But I mean, I'm talking about the whole damn continent. Africa is a massive natural resource reserve for what we call space age technology metals and alloys.
Yep. Rare earth.
You know, it is an old continent.
Mineral.
Yeah, it's an old continent. There's a lot there. And people who buy into this thing that we're saving the world or democratizing the world, you said it very clearly earlier. You can't force democracy from the outside. People look at the world through their eyes. We've got 2,000 years of our civilization development or longer. You know, if you want to go all the way back to the 12 tribes of Israel, you know, you can see a basic format of our, you know, state sovereignty issues. You know, we've developed this over eons of time. It is our culture. It's in our religion. It's in our economics. It's, you know, everything. Our government institute is a boiled down version of our whole cultural existence. When you go to these other countries, they're like looking at us going like, we don't want you. We don't want what you've done to your culture. We don't want what you've done to your children. They actually have some traditional values in these countries. You know what I mean? I mean, come on. Go to,
you mean like we
country
did in the 1950s?
Yeah, no shit. Go to another country and pretend you're from a traditional family value, you know, whether you're Hindu or Muslim or whatever, or even, you know, caustic Christian, and look back at our television shows and our advertisement. There are a lot of people in the world don't want our crap. You know,
I don't want our corporatist crap myself. You know, and we certainly should
or our cultural destruction. You know.
Yeah.
You know.
But let's be clear about a couple of things. You know, and I think that Rand Paul gave the speech at the Heritage Foundation a while back. But a true constitutional foreign policy is one where you're not out to save the world. Now, sometimes there are some things that are so dangerous and egregious that you're going to have to deal with them anyway. I mean, does anybody have any inclination that, you know, belief that if we had let Hitler take over Europe, that we wouldn't have gone to war with a bigger, stronger Nazi Germany at some point? Sometimes you do have to do it. But when you do it the way we did it then. We went over there. We went full on. We kicked ass. And we came home. Now, granted, there are some issues with Germany and staying there in the Cold War and all that kind of stuff. But the very simple fact is you can have a very robust foreign policy. You can defeat the enemy where it needs to be defeated and only engage the enemy when it's a threat to you. The reason that these wars happen is because they're extremely profitable, because they fund both sides, and because it breeds a state of emergency situation at home where they can just grow their power here, and like I said before, tyranny abroad always engenders tyranny at home. So how do you cut that off? End the free flow of money from the Fed, and you will only be able to prosecute wars efficiently. You can't have 10-year wars. And then the thing with Afghanistan, guess what brought down the Soviet Union? Yes, it was the pressure put on by Reagan and Thatcher and blessed John Paul II, but it was because they overextended themselves going through Afghanistan. No one's ever conquered Afghanistan in the history of man. Why are we there? You know, go in, do the job. Exactly. And then the other thing is you mentioned, you know, taking out bin Laden when we had the opportunity and Clinton dropped the ball. I agree. But you want to know something? We dropped the ball further back. We made bin Laden. When the Soviets went in Afghanistan, the CIA created and trained bin Laden, and then he turned on us. So when you go overseas with your military information and shipping F-16s to the Muslim Brotherhood and training them in our tactics and our skills and all the stuff that we've learned, what assures you that they're not going to turn around and use those things against you down the road? So stop it. If you want to be strong, build a strong defense at home. Be ready to kick anybody's ass if it needs to be done. But don't put American blood and treasure on the line to democratize the world. Okay?
Well,
we're falling apart.
You guys
here
are a bunch of isolationists, and you're the problem.
Think about this one. You remember, everybody remembers George S. Patton, right? You know, it is amazing to me that the guy looked at our allies, the communist Russia, and he looked at them and he turned to his the politicians and his leaders, his leadership, and said, if you don't push these guys back inside their own damn borders, we're going to fight them for the next 50 years. And then he died in a freak accident. Look at North Korea, my dad.
I don't know how much of a freak accident that was.
Yeah, well, I was laughing. You heard that. But, you know, look at North Korea. You know, we got involved in Korea. My dad was in Korea. And then we stopped and right in the middle of winning and finishing the damn thing. And look what we've been doing for the last 50-some, 60 years in North Korea. You know, the fear and the money and the crisis and the hand-wringing and the tears and the anguish. And then and the thing that people don't listen to, and it's the information's out there, is we send them money. This is and then we watch the news of the day, you know, with the target picture on the White House, and everybody wrings their hands and cries in anguish. Well, we just sent them a bunch of frickin' money. Mm-hmm. I mean, this, you know, there's something broken, and Newt talked about this. He said it's broken. The system is broken, and it needs to be. And Newt is not an isolationist at all. He believes in strong, kick-ass,
Reagan-type
mindset.
Kind of neocon tendencies.
Yeah, but not as bad as what we have today. Yeah, anyway, that was my input on that one.
No, I agree. And look, here's the thing is you're never going to find, if you're looking for a candidate, whether it's for the House, the Senate, the President, or your locality, who is perfect and agrees with you on every issue, give up right now. Just don't even participate in politics. It's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. So just deal with reality. The reality is you can find broad areas of agreement. Stick to those, especially now. Because right now, you know, we're not pussyfooting with, you know, do we do a little of this or a little less of that or a little more of this or a little more of that. We are now at the stage where we are about to experience a total economic collapse, where we're about to break our military force because it's overextended, and we're about to have social chaos, upheaval, and the destruction of the republic. That's where this is going. Okay, so what you need to do is for people who understand this and people who love this country on both the, quote, left and the right, is you got to build coalitions and roll back this federal government and roll back the corporatist influence, or we all lose. After you get this done, then you can talk about your other issues. Now, here's Rand actually talking about, you know, I identified himself as a conservative. And we're focusing on Rand, folks, not because, you know, we love Rand and Rand's going to be the president. We're focusing on Rand because he is currently right now the number one statesman on the national stage who's actually standing up for the Constitution, for liberty, for conservatism. And he actually addresses here his, quote, libertarian conservatism. And again, let's point it out. There's three facets to libertarianism. There's economic libertarianism, which is free markets. If you don't like free markets, this is probably not the country for you. We have political libertarianism, where you have federalism and checks and balances and diffusion of power. If you don't like that, there's plenty of places that have very consolidated power. Go there. And, of course, there's social libertarianism, which generally tends to libertinism, and you're going to have a tough time convincing traditional conservatives and Christian conservatives to hop on that bandwagon. And conservatives and Christians who have strong social issues, quit trying to enact those politically. Okay? You don't enact those things politically. You enact those by engaging people's hearts and minds. Okay? And that's something you do personally in a system of power where you have local autonomy and you make up the rules and compete in the marketplace of non-truth and love. Okay? So get over yourselves and start working together. Here's Rand talking to Wallace on Fox News about his, quote, libertarian conservatism. And actually, I think there might be a little drug talk in here.
You are, as you mentioned, a libertarian conservative, and in your CPAC speech, you embrace some of those principles. Let's take a look.
Our party is encumbered by an inconsistent approach to freedom. The new GOP will need to embrace liberty in both the economic and the personal sphere.
Let's talk about the personal sphere, because you would like to relax some of the laws for people who possess and are smoking marijuana. And you also in the Senate have voted against a ban on synthetic recreational drugs. Why are you more lenient on drug laws, sir?
The main thing I've said is not to legalize them, but not to incarcerate people for extended period of times. So I'm working with Senator Leahy. We have a bill on mandatory minimums. There are people in jail for 37, 50, 45 years for nonviolent crimes, and that's a huge mistake. Our prisons are full of nonviolent criminals. I don't want to encourage people to do it. I think even marijuana is a bad thing to do. I think it takes away your incentive to work and show up and do the things that you should be doing. I don't think it's a good idea. I don't want to promote that, but I also don't want to put people in jail who make a mistake. There are a lot of young people who do this, and then later on in their 20s, they grow up and get married and they quit doing things like this. I don't want to put them in jail and ruin their life. Look, the last two presidents could conceivably have been put in jail for their drug use. And I really think, look what would have happened. It would have ruined their lives. They got lucky, but a lot of poor kids, particularly in the inner city, don't get lucky. They don't have good attorneys, and they go to jail for these things, and I think it's a big mistake.
Actually, I think it would be the last three presidents, but who's counting? Let me ask you about a different issue.
There you go.
the Supreme, well, he didn't inhale.
It's a showdown. And Rand is firing on all six cylinders. Look, the interesting thing is, he's a physician. Keep in mind, he is an ophthalmologist. For all you crazy conservatives who think that every libertarian is, a pot-smoking, sodomite that wants to, rape your children, clearly Rand Paul made it very clear there that he discourages people from smoking marijuana. Okay, but putting them in prison and having a federal program to do this could ruin their lives. There are better ways to straighten them up, so to speak. And frankly, let's think about this for a second. Whether someone on crack cocaine, and there's argument whether marijuana is a gateway drug or not. I happen to think that you start smoking dope, you'll end up snorting cocaine at some point or doing something stupid just because your inhibitions are lowered. But nevertheless, people tend not to commit the most violent crimes when they're smoking pot. They tend to just eat a lot and play video games. Talk them out of it. Reach their hearts and minds. But we don't have the money to spend on this crap, incarcerating people for these kinds of things, when you've got rapists, murderers, drunk drivers, sociopaths, and psychopaths out there. So let's focus, okay? It's all about the economic law of scarcity. There's only so much time. There's only so much money. Put things in order. This is a low priority. Guys, take it on Rand Paul's position there.
Yeah, I was typing. Tex, you want to go, and then I'll go?
No, I would just say I think that he's correct about that, that, look, jailing people for smoking pot or whatever when they're in college at this point is kind of ridiculous. The war on drugs has led to the transformation of our local police force from the police force that we know and love and pay for into a paramilitary unit with no-knock warrants swarming in on people busting in doors, shooting people's dogs, because, hey, if the dog barks at you, you know, it could be a threatening thing. You just blow that person's dog away. They go to the wrong damn door, blows
shooting
the wrong
person in the wrong house.
Yeah, exactly. Shooting people in the wrong house. And you know what? In the United States, if somebody's breaking into your house, you have a right to defend yourself. You have a gun. All of a sudden, you hear somebody bursting into the house. You pull out your gun. You point it at the person breaking into your house. Holy shit, it turns out it's the police. Now they kill you. And you know what? Legally, they're entitled to do that because you pulled a gun on a police officer not knowing that it was a police officer. And so everything's kosher and you're dead.
11%.
All because some 11%. College students like to get high and watch adults swim. I mean, is it just me or does that seem a little reactionary? You know, have we gone too far? Now, let's consider the fact that Barack Obama smoked pot. George Bush smoked pot, and otherwise, is my understanding, Bill Clinton did as well. Also,
didn't inhale.
Yeah, he didn't inhale. Also,
but Monica
Newt
did.
Newt Gingrich did as well. Multiple other people, you know. And now, look at what we've done to our society, all in the name of the war on drugs. Look, the amount of law that you need in order to prevent someone from doing in their own house something that they want to do is so great that you will erode every single liberty that you have in the process. And you know what? They're doing it right now anyway. I guarantee, even as we speak, there are tens of millions of people in this country who are high at this very moment doing this very thing. These laws are not effective. The only thing they're effective at doing is eroding your freedom in your own house.
Well,
and as you move around the country.
Yeah, and they create the cartels. I mean, I'm not saying pot alone, but, you know, it's more complicated than that. I don't want to oversimplify it. You know.
Well, yeah, it does. I mean, look at what happened during Prohibition. Now, when a Budweiser truck passes a Miller Lite truck, they don't open machine gun fire on each other like they used to back in the day.
Sometimes in California that does happen.
Yeah,
they had more fun in the past. Come on, we need to go back to those era.
Yeah,
same thing with cigarette trucks, right?
Yeah.
You know, a Marlboro truck doesn't fire on I don't even know the brand. But I'm Marlboro, and there must be another brand.
Camel.
Camels, yes, okay, a Camel truck. You can tell I'm not a smoker. So they're
well,
not
but we have a war on
show,
terror
right?
Right now, so it's okay to shoot the Camels.
Yeah.
Look, this point, I think this is the point that Rand was making, okay? It's not a good thing. He's not recommending people do this, okay? But, you know, we're all stupid kids at some point. You do stupid stuff. And the fact is, if you spend money you don't have, okay, and what's happening here is you've got judges releasing rape and pedophiles and murderers through plea bargains and low terms out on the street so that we can incarcerate, you know, drug users. Now, should we incarcerate all of them? Maybe, okay? Maybe that's a great idea. But guess what? We don't have the resources. So pick a priority. What's worse, a murderer, pedophile, rapist, or, you know, a drug user who might actually need help getting off the drug?
Right.
And the other, you know, the other thing is you take a kid, you know, who's got a dime bag of pot and throw him in jail. Guess what he's going to find in prison? Sodomites, and he's going to get hooked on heroin. So you're not helping, okay? Now, I personally think that when you make something legal, you're essentially giving it moral sanction and more people are likely to do it and it'll be easier to access. However, you have to also deal with things as they really are. Right now, for most kids, it's easier for them to get pot than it is for them to get beer. Okay?
Yes.
So but how do you fix these problems? Clearly, the path we've been taking for the last 30 years is not working. You got more people doing drugs. You got more money in drugs. You got more violence in drugs. How about you allow the localities and the states to each take care of it in their own way depending on their particular situation, and then the ones that succeed can show the others the pathway, and the ones that fail can teach us what not to do. Instead, we've got one failed program that is very expensive, and it's not working. So if you want a real war on drugs, send it back to the states.
Not just
that.
Well,
the whole concept is – you know, look, the loss leader, right? So you have a bunch of products for sale, and you have the one most popular product, but it doesn't make you any money. And the reason that you price the product in a way that doesn't make you any money is it brings people into your store. And then once they're in the store, like, oh, yeah, you like that, but maybe you could also like this, which does make me money and does make me profit, right? This is the concept behind drug dealers and marijuana. By making marijuana illegal, down here in Texas, it's easier for people to get access to marijuana when they're underage, under drinking age, than it is to get access to beer. That's just a fact.
I know.
Because
it's insane.
It exists in a completely different system, right? They exist, one's on the black market and one's on the public market, right, which is regulated and controlled. And so people will go to the black market in order to get access to marijuana, and guess what? Marijuana is their lost leader, and they have a whole bunch of other products which actually will destroy and ruin your life permanently and forever, some of which you may not ever get off of if you ever get on it in the first place, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they do have that marijuana. So if you were to legalize it and sell it at the beer and liquor store, the worst thing this person would ever get access to later in life is something like alcohol. But instead, you let this very young, naive person who is not yet of drinking age, which is why they're going to get the marijuana in the first place, get access to it, and someone who's there who's selling it to them has no legal strictures or bounds on their activity, and they're like, hey, maybe you'd be interested in this, maybe you'd be interested in that. It's true. That's what happens.
Well, and the other thing, you know, go ahead,
Chris. No, Chris, you go.
Well, when we did the, you know, the gun shows and all the research, we uncovered a tremendous amount of information that was just shocking. And also, when I moved out of Alaska and got down to the Seattle market, every time one of these guys, you know, that ends up, you know, in the front news, you know, for doing something violent and crazy, he's got a massive felony after felony after, you know, violent crime and rape and murder and all this crap. And you're going, what the hell is he doing on the street? You know, they're letting, and Luke did a bunch of research on this in our gun shows, or, you know, our gun control shows, you know, the numbers of violent criminals being let back on the street is incredible. And these people, this crap, we see it in the news all the time, these crazy psychos walking into people's homes, and they don't care if somebody's home or not. They just kill them, rape them, you know, eat their dog, whatever, you know. And you're going, like, what are they doing on the street? I mean, it is our system, you know. It's not, the argument isn't over, you know, should pot be legal or not. The argument is over, why are we spending tens of billions of dollars making criminals out of partiers and the people that associate in that world, when we're allowing these crazy sick psychos that everybody freaks out for? You know, we don't even prosecute. It's all, you know, what Rex said earlier. I've seen the stats on this, the plea bargaining on these guys. That's why a guy has 8 felonies and he just raped and killed another woman and her children. You know, you're like going, that guy should never have been out on the street.
It's almost as if somebody wants violent criminals. It's like somebody wants violent criminals out on the street, and if someone isn't a violent criminal, let's get them in the system so we can make them a violent criminal and then release them out on the street. I'm just saying.
It is a little bit insane, isn't it?
You know, and the thing you have to ask yourself is, what's the number one reason that kids get into this stuff, other than the fact that, you know, everybody's doing it and peer pressure and all this kind of stuff? Number one reason? Where's that? Where's that?
What'd you say?
Where's that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So perhaps, you know, for you traditional conservatives and you Christian conservatives, oh, we can't legalize drugs because the kids will all be high. Guess what? Most of the kids are already high. So that's a fait accompli already. And number two, the reason that this is happening isn't because marijuana is legal, because guess what? It's not right now. Okay. And if you decriminalize it, it may increase usage or not, but the real problem is we've allowed our values and our culture to degrade. And you know who I blame for that? I don't blame the New World Order. I don't blame the Illuminati. I don't blame the federal government. I blame Christians.
Mm-hmm.
Your job as a Christian, and it's not an option, if you profess Christ, and we're talking on Palm Sunday today, right? And this is very important, because guess what? He rode into Jerusalem, you know, Hosanna to the Son of David, on a donkey on Sunday, and by Friday, you nailed him to a cross, okay? So just think about this. Your job as a Christian, your primary responsibility is to preach Christ crucified and to teach love. And if you're not doing that, you're not fulfilled. It's not an option. It's a command. He told you that's what you have to do. If you love me, this is what you'll do. Okay? And you're not doing it. That's why this is falling apart. Don't sit there and tell me that, oh, you know what? I'm going to go to church on Sunday, and I'm going to be a good Christian. But then when it comes to actually preaching, I'm going to elect some idiot to go to Washington and pass laws to make people Christians. That's not going to work.
Make people moral. Yeah.
You have to do it.
Yeah.
You have to do it in your community, one by one, step by step, and rebuild the family that way. Yes, there's a march for marriage on Tuesday because the Supreme Court is thinking about redefining marriage for whatever reason, or, you know. The law is only the law when you follow it, okay? But the law, the moral law is in your heart. And if people don't know it, you've let them down. Pope Francis is all over the news now because the media thinks, oh, this is a pope for the poor, okay? What Pope Francis has been talking about as far as poor, he's not talking so much about the materially and economically poor.
Yeah.
Yes, that needs to be addressed. He's talking about spiritually poor. And you know whose fault that is? It's your fault. You're supposed to be the salt and the light. So quit voting for politicians like Rick Santorum, who, you know, come across as if they're, you know, and I'm not saying he's a bad guy. He's a good Catholic Christian, good family man. But don't vote for him so that he can legislate morality for you, because it's not going to work. You need to reach out to people. You need to love them. You need to go where they are. That's how you fix the problem. And when you rebuild the family, kids won't want to do drugs.
Well, and the spinoff on this, Rex and Tex, is very important. Is this is why you don't have an overreaching central government. Every day, people bitch about Obama and post the news of the day. Obama is just extending Bush's administration, Bush's wars, Bush's assaults on your liberties. He's all that was done, you know, the Patriot Act and everything else was done under Bush, but it was okay when it was a Republican? Bull crap. It was wrong. It was against the foundation of our Constitution, our Bill of Rights. And when people talk about Rand Paul, not to, you know, focus on him so much, but he's the only guy talking about this crap right now, you know. And his dad's out in the colleges talking about it. But, you know, he's saying, when government expands, liberties contract. And it's gone so far, both sides. If you want your culture back, if you want your right to have traditional family and your right to be a Christian and raise your kids and in that faith and all that stuff, you've got to get the power back to the people, because you're having your butt kicked and your rights stolen, including your religious rights, because you have a federal government which is secular, and 99% of it is liberal and socialistic. You know, what we used to call secular humanism. And you're not going to win that battle at the federal government. You win this battle of culture in your community, in your home, in your marriage, in your school, in your church. That's where you're going to win the war. So you want a libertarian-type person to give you back your power and protect your religion, including religions which are not yours, Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say that and beat up on you because I is one. You know,
or even if you
Muslims are a legal religion in this country. Mormons are a legal religion in this country. They have the same rights as you do, and you need to understand that, you know, because we've got this war going on. It's ridiculous.
And Chris, the things that we're talking about, I mean, look, I got my issues with the theology of both Mormons and Muslims, but the things that we're talking about having an intact family at home with a mom and a dad who teach their kids right from wrong so that they won't give in to these temptations to smoke pot or do anything else, okay?
That's something when they do, Muslims, they come back.
Obviously, but what I'm saying is that you give them the tools to resist these temptations. Muslims, Mormons, Hindus, Buddhists, on all various denominations of Christians agree on this. So, you know, there's no quibbling here, but you're not doing it. None of you are doing it. You know, you're not, at least if you're doing it, maybe you're doing it at home, but you're not doing it in the community at large. And why is that? Because everybody, as the state grows, the state becomes God, and God gets displaced. Okay? And for you libertarians who have, kind of an Ayn Rand bent or you're somewhat atheistic, guess what? This is important for you too, okay?
Yeah.
Not only because it's the right thing and you know it's the right thing, because I know a lot of good moral people who happen to be atheists or pagans or something else, okay? And St. Paul clearly spoke about this, that moral law is written on our hearts even if you're not baptized. It's just you don't necessarily have access to the grace to actually follow through on these things that we all know we should, okay? But you know what is right and what is wrong. And you have to keep in mind that if we allow the government to grow, and even if you're a liberal Democrat and you're cheering this on, you know, well, let's force the Catholic Church to sell contraceptives. The next Southern Baptist president who gets in there and has this power over the First Amendment, maybe he forces you to go to church on Sunday. So, you know, and guess what? That doesn't really work, because if you're forced to go, you're not going for Christ, you're going because someone held a gun to your head. That doesn't work. Okay, so that's why these freedoms are there, and that's what Rand Paul is talking about. He's talking about liberty. And actually, Rand Paul addressed this controversial issue. Here's a minute and a half on Rand talking about marriage.
Now, the Supreme Court will hear arguments on same-sex marriage this week. You say the federal government should stay out of this issue and leave it as it has traditionally been left to the states. Should the court, therefore, strike down the Defense of Marriage Act, which is one of the cases it's going to be hearing this week, which bans federal benefits for same-sex couples who are legally married in their state? Would you strike down that as federal interference in a state matter?
You know, I think it's a really complicated issue. I've always said that the states have the right to decide. I do believe in traditional marriage. Kentucky's decided it. And I don't think the federal government should tell us otherwise. There are states that have decided in the opposite fashion, and I don't think the federal government should tell anybody or any state government how they should decide this. Marriage has been a state issue for hundreds and hundreds of years. DOMA is complicated, though, because DOMA does provide protection for the states from the federal government, but then you're right, part of it federalizes the issue. I think there's a chance the court could strike down the federalization part of it. If they do, I think the way to fix it is maybe to try to make all of our laws more neutral towards the issue. And I don't want the government promoting something I don't believe in, but I also don't mind if the government tries to be neutral on the issue. You know, the tax code, I'm for a flat income tax, and we wouldn't have marriage as part of the tax code. Health insurance, I think there's a way to write it where it would be neutral and you wouldn't bring marriage into the whole idea of health insurance.
Bingo.
It's a showdown,
you know,
and I think Rand nailed it.
That's not a libertarian concept. That is a conservative concept. This is what people don't understand in the attacks on Rand Paul.
And it's more Tenth Amendment oriented than Gary Johnson's position.
Well, it's a constitutional position because the founders never thought that the federal government would be getting involved in marriage. I mean, you think that any of the states would have signed up for to the Constitution and join the United States if they thought the federal government had a say in marriage? They never would have done it.
You're absolutely correct.
And look, he said that the federal government shouldn't be in it. It shouldn't. I mean, it's very simple. Now here's the thing. Allegedly, okay, we're being told that this is all about fairness and equality, and that people with same-sex attraction should be allowed to be in long-term committed relationships and have all the same benefits, the federal benefits that everybody else has. Well, instead of trying to change the definition of marriage, which is an ontological institution that's existed from the dawn of time, it's been like this for tens of thousands of years, you cannot redefine it. It is biologically written to us, okay? How about we just ban the federal benefits? Again, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. The welfare warfare state creates these problems. Without that, then you wouldn't have this issue of fairness. And then, of course, what about inheritance? Well, through wills and trusts, you can leave your money to a dog. So you can certainly leave it to your gay partner. With healthcare proxies, you can have your gay partner come to the hospital and stay with you. There is no reason to have to redefine marriage in order to make people with same-sex attraction have, these benefits. So why worry about it? Okay, and the very simple fact is that with local autonomy, each community will decide. Now, do you think that most Bible Belt communities are going to go ahead and shift the definition of marriage to include sodomites and lesbians? I doubt that very much. Will Manhattan do it, or Los Angeles? Maybe. And guess what? Let them have it. I mean, think about it, right? We're talking about how, there's 20 years as a generation from 74 when Reagan said libertarianism is the heart of conservatism to 94 when Gingrich led the revolution to 20 years later here we're on our heels. Well, if you let the sodomites and lesbians have at it in Manhattan and Los Angeles, in about 40 years, maybe 60 years, those two cities will be completely depopulated. Problem solved. So what are you freaking out about?
You're funny sometimes.
I mean, it's a scientific fact.
Populated from taxation pretty soon anyway. Everybody's moving.
Yeah, I mean, people are going to run. People are going to run. See, and this is another point about state sovereignty and state issues and also the income tax thing. I threw that in there as you were on your roll. But the other point is, if we don't have a federal government propping up all these failed states like California and the rest of them, you know, that are broke, that are enacting all these insane programs, you know, if your money wasn't going to the federal government to prop those states up, those states would fall backwards, and then they would have to make adjustments and change. Here's the thing that people don't understand about life in general in a society is it's not static. It seems to me that so many Christians, you know, want to go back to the 1950s Leave It to Beaver era. Well, that era will never occur in the dynamics that are going on right now. And if you look at the 1950s, that was a post-war, you know, Second World War. And typically societies will retract, and I don't want to misuse this term, but people get down to the basics. You know, I have a thing in my mind called remoralization, but you know what I'm saying? People get back to the basics. It's this, everybody is funded. It's just like socialism in Europe. It never would have happened, and this is an unintended consequences of our meddling. Yeah, we went and saved the world, but then we paid for the protection and the military of the world in our European brothers and sisters, and then because they didn't have that extra economics that they had to deal with, that allowed them to start experimenting with socialization programs. And now look at us. We're a freaking mess. That was an unintended consequence. That's another reason why you don't want central control. Go ahead.
More intended. Look, the simple fact is that marriage is a natural institution. Okay, it is created as a function of our biology, and because unlike, you know, animals that are born and within a couple hours they're walking and they can see and pretty much function as they would need to for their survival, human beings require a very long time, several decades, in order to fully develop into self-functioning creatures. And that requires to have both parents there for very specific reasons. And that's how marriage exists. Also, from a religious perspective, it is a sacrament, and it just doesn't work the other way. The thing you have to ask yourself is, why should the government define something that already is? Oh, well, it's about fairness. Well, you know what? Instead of focusing on marriage, why don't you focus on the other problem? The government shouldn't be disincentivizing or incentivizing marriage. However,
there
is something pretty important here. Stable families with a mom and a dad and lots of kids, more than just mom and dad. If you're not having at least 2.1 kids per couple, then you are slowly depopulating, in some cases rapidly depopulating, your own country, which is
Europe.
Stupid.
Europe.
Okay, Europe's
Captain
doing it. Russia.
Europe.
I mean, Russia was 200 million when Reagan was taking down the USSR. Within 50 years, there'll be less than 70 million people. Same problem in Japan. So, you know, you're depopulating yourself. China's got a slightly different problem with the ratio of males and females because of sex-selective abortions. But you have to ask yourself this. If you don't have a stable family unit and you don't have religious freedom, then those things which are provided by a stable family with complementary parents, mom and dad, and a nurturing environment and income or work or labor or what have you, and raising and nurturing of children, and you don't have religious freedom, then those things are going to have to be satisfied by another entity. What entity is then going to become the provider, the protector, the nurturer, the food provider, and the ability to, you know, have some kind of transcendent expression? It's all going to fall right into the hands of government, and then government gets bigger, and government becomes mommy and daddy, and government becomes God, and now you have no liberty whatsoever. That's how serious this is.
Your God becomes a bureaucrat, administering laws and rules. I have no idea why anybody would be stupid enough to think that's going to be fair. Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, it's not an issue of it being stupid enough to be fair. It's a matter of creating this false left-right divide in order to pit us against each other and pit you know, heterosexuals against homosexuals and pit, you know, various Christians against Christians who are pro-abortion and pit Democrats versus Republicans. So we're too busy arguing with each other, and then the state just grows, and that's the problem. Tex, have we solved the technical difficulties?
Yes, we have. Well,
excellent.
At least I'm back on. I don't know if the technical difficulty is solved, but yeah. So, anyway, here I am. What's the topic
again?
Well,
real quick, we've got 10 minutes of live time left. We'll probably spill into overtime. So for all of you listening live, if you want to, I won't have time to bring on any calls. I thought we would today, but we've just kind of jam-packed it with this conversation. Call in right now so you can listen live, 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. And, you know, we're going to try to wrap this up pretty soon. If you're in the archive podcast, just keep
let's
going.
Let's call her because that would, well, if we can, because that would That would help my non-segue into whatever we were just talking about, which I wasn't able to hear.
Well, that's okay.
If not, I will filibuster about, throw me a topic, I'll talk about it.
Well, I'm going to throw you an interesting clip on Rand Paul, and you run with it. Here's a minute on Rand Paul discussing the false left-right paradigm.
My goal.
Senator Paul, as I was studying up for this interview and hearing you today, I'm having some difficulty figuring out exactly where you are on the political spectrum, because in some senses you're to the left of Barack Obama when it comes to drones. On the other hand, you're to the right of Congressman Paul Ryan, whose budget you opposed, voted against this weekend in the Senate, because you say that it doesn't cut the budget, balance the budget fast enough. Do you think there's room for a realistic, feasible presidential candidate who's to the left of Obama on some issues and to the right of Paul Ryan on other issues?
I think we have a confusing spectrum. This left-right spectrum doesn't always work for people. But I think because of some of that confusion, it shows that someone like myself, I think, could appeal to young people, independents, and moderates, because many of them do think it's a mistake to put people in jail for marijuana use and throw away the key. So I think there are people who would like a less aggressive foreign policy. There are all kinds of issues that don't neatly fit in the left-right paradigm that I think would help, because we're not doing very well in a lot of these states, these purple and blue states. So we do need a candidate that would appeal across the left-right.
It's a showdown.
Yeah.
Why don't you go ahead and take it?
Well, I'll just start here. What in the hell was Chris Wallace talking about? Well, you seem to be the left of Barack Obama on drones, but you're to the right on the budget. What the fuck are you talking about?
He's full of crap. Yeah, he's full of crap.
The guys, here's someone who speaks about politics on a daily basis, yet he doesn't understand that politics is not a line on the left-right axis. It's not a line. As we said before, there's a third dimension, which is concentrated power, centralized power, versus decentralized power or liberty. And if you understand it on that axis, it's quite clear where Rand Paul is in the decentralized power liberty spectrum rather than the concentrated power spectrum that the Democrat-Republican Party is currently at. And so here he is. And that's the purpose of the media, is not to inform you but to confuse you and make everybody feel like they sit in one of these two continuums between the left and right, when even as he himself explained, it's a false dichotomy, because you can't explain Rand Paul if you only understand what's going on in two dimensions. Why is Ron Paul more popular today than he was when he started? Well, it's because there's this third dimension, which is crying out for representation and for leadership. Lead us away from centralized government. Lead us back towards where we were as a country. You think union people want to see, you know, drone strikes in the country, or they want to see all this concentrated power up in Washington? No, they don't. Do you think other people on the left want to see this? No, they don't. Washington has gone too far, and the country is crying out for somebody who's going to lead us out of the darkness and into the light, and that light being towards more individual freedom, more individual liberty. And that is the yawning movement in politics in America today. That is the challenge, the political challenge that the people are putting to our politicians that needs to be answered. And yet here we have our media stuck in left-right. You know where left-right comes from? The freaking French Revolution, 1789. For God's sakes, you haven't even updated your crib notes in 1789? Good Lord.
And you know why it was the left? It was just simply because they sat on the left side of the building, the radicals. That's how stupid this division is. You know,
this is what drives me insane about the left-right paradigm. The left, the radicals, sat on the left side, and the conservatives, they sat on the right side, right? Well, who were the conservatives back then? What were they trying to conserve? The monarchy. They were the monarchists. They were the statists. Well, who is the right in the United States today? People who are talking about limited government, you know, economic freedom, or free people. Those were the leftist ideas back then, because our revolution was a leftist revolution. Classical liberalism is what we were about. That we have to qualify that now as classical liberalism, because the classical liberals continued to go until, hey, we could turn everything over to the state, and the state will be so smart that we can get back to essentially monarchy, Jeb Bush. You know, and they will govern in our favor, right? Well, the left has gone too far. They've looped. They've come around the bend, and now they're back to monarchy. But that's why left.
I would agree with you. The similarities, you know, between the French and the American revolutions, both being anti-monarchy. The difference is our revolution was actually a conservative revolution. Because our founding fathers were seeking to conserve, hundreds of years of the tradition of liberty, and most prominently going back to the Magna Carta. So these were they were reclaiming rights that they already had as British subjects. They already had these rights. They were reclaiming them because King George was taking them away. The French, on the other hand, were simply trying to overturn the entire gamut of society. It wasn't just about getting rid of the monarchy. They changed the week became 10 days long. They changed the calendar. They eliminated all the Christian holidays, and it was essentially a Catholic country. They killed the priests, and it was a violent.
Land.
They started with the assignats. So they took away all the church lands, and then pyramided paper money on top of them. And then as soon as that paper money started collapsing, they decided that they were going to export their revolution to the rest of Europe and started sending their army overseas. And then eventually you got Bonaparte. Our revolution was completely different, which is why when you see someone like Rand Paul, who Chris Wallace, allegedly an intelligent person, is telling you, well, you're the left of this and you're on the right of that, he's a friggin' idiot, because the simple fact is Rand Paul is simply trying to conserve those very same principles that our founding fathers fought a war to conserve. That makes you a conservative. And if you're anything other than that, you're crazy.
Well, and here's a key thing, too, that people in our modern era just don't seem to understand, especially, you know, people who think we need to have our fingers in all the world. And they think that, you know, Rand or his dad were isolationists and, you know, freaking out about that. I mean, they had to drag us, you know, they drug us fighting into the First World War, and we did the same thing with the Second World War. It wasn't until the Japanese came over here and stepped on our land and territory and bombed Pearl Harbor that we finally got up and said, oh, crap, we got to get involved now. You know, our forefathers up until the Cold War and this whole, you know, post-Eisenhower neocon war, industrial war machine, which he warned us about as he was leaving office, it says, don't let this become the norm. This is not America. Our founding fathers, I mean, I don't know how many people know this, but they should, you know, they were about don't get caught up in foreign entanglements. They were a colony. They left Europe. They left oppression. They left, you know, this constant war and empire building and manipulation of other people's cultures and religions and everything else. They came to America and said, we want to be free, you know? And freedom was trade and free enterprise and individual liberty. That's what this country was founded on. That's what this country became great on. And what's destroying us is we've become a non-occupying empire builder. And politicians just don't make good decisions.
Politicians suck. What you need is statesmen. And I think the principal reason most people came to this country back then was because they wanted religious freedom.
Yeah.
And you know, and now our government has taken that away. And for those of you who don't have a particular religious bent, you know, when George Bush beats the next when George Bush beats the next, you know, Democrat and becomes your president, maybe he forces you to go to church on Sunday. That'll be great. You know, I mean, it liberty unites people. Ron Paul's message was about liberty. Rand Paul is picking up that mantle, and he's doing it in a way that is as shrewd as Newt Gingrich and as principled as Ron Paul. And you better get on the bandwagon. I don't care if you support him in 2016 or if he runs in 2016 or doesn't run in 2016. We've got 2 years, and if in 2014, if this Republican Party, and for you Constitution Party people, Libertarians, Independents, the odds of you guys getting a significant majority in those two houses is about as close to zero as it gets, so it's going to be either Republicans or Democrats. If you give Obama a Democratic House and increase the Senate beyond two-thirds, the 2014 to 2016 will be the worst two-year period in the history of these United States. So if you want to win, you better find the guys that are up there on that hill right now that are doing it, that are appealing to a broad voter base, and that are getting things done that are constitutionalist. And that right now is Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Justin Amash and the rest of those wacko birds. Tex?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we need to start... What you have to understand is, look, by talking about limited government, libertarianism, you know, the Ron Paul movement, the liberty movement, right? Okay, well, some people, these concepts have been demonized in your mind by the likes of Karl Rove appearing on Fox News, right? Because that is about promoting the Republican Party. And, oh, my God, if we're talking about these types of things, well, that's Ron Paul, and Ron Paul's not strong on national defense because he doesn't want to invade the entire planet. So that's bad for the Republican Party. If we're strong on national defense, let's marginalize Ron Paul and get rid of him. Okay, look, this is what Mark Levin is talking about in Liberty versus Tyranny, right? What is liberty? Okay, it's freedom from government control. Well, if the government's invading the entire planet, then it's, you know, sucking your money, taking your money away, and taking citizens and sending them overseas to go fight these wars that it can't afford, and therefore it needs to inflate the dollar, which is theft from you by an indirect means, non-taxation, to go send people overseas to go fight these wars. This is what liberty is about, trying to fight these concepts and ideas. This doesn't necessarily have to do with Ron Paul. It's not, we're not here trying to pump up Ron Paul. I was not in this election a Ron Paul guy, although I was Ron Paul friendly. I was a Newt Gingrich person. I thought that he would have a better chance of representing the Republican Party than Ron Paul would. But I do like Ron Paul, and I like a lot of what he has to say. I disagree with him in a lot of ways. But the point is, the direction that we need to go is towards liberty. Find candidates in your localities that support liberty and freedom and limiting government control. Quit supporting people who keep finding how Washington is going to solve your problem, and find people who are trying to get the problem out of Washington and sent back to your locality where you and your neighbors can figure it out, rather than where a bunch of douchebags in Washington can figure it out for you in a conversation with their political donors in a way that will screw you and your locality. That's what you need to do. That really all, for all the demonization of Ron Paul and all that kind of stuff, that's all those people are saying. It's not Washington's problem. It's your problem, and you should solve it, not D.C.
And you bring up a great point, Tex, and that is that liberty comes with responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have freedom without duty. And if you understand liberty the way that our heritage of liberty has come about over a long period of time, okay, liberty, and it is, for all of you non-Christians and non-Jews out there, the tradition of liberty in the West, the tradition of liberty that these United States were founded on, is Judeo-Christian, okay? That doesn't mean you have to be a practicing Jew or a practicing Christian to partake in it, but you have to understand the history of it. And the simple fact is that liberty is the freedom to do that which you ought to do. Now, that's where the debate comes in. Who decides what you ought to do? Well, if you're a God-fearing Christian, then you know that God decides what you ought to do, okay? If you're not, then you're going to have to do it on your own, okay? Very simple. However, for you Christians out there who think that we should force people to do what they ought to do, it doesn't work that way, and that's not the way Jesus did it. But you have to have the freedom to influence others to evangelize, to proselytize. If you don't have that freedom, then you'll simply be running away from the state, and you won't be able to spread the gospel. And you're supposed to spread the gospel. The government's not supposed to spread the gospel for you. Okay? And if you look at the places where the government has become so strong, the first targets are always Jews and Christians.
Look at
what happened in Mexico. Okay, I mean, Mexico is our neighbor. We talk about it all the time with these immigration policies. We have a lot of people from Mexico coming to the United States. Mexico, basically, and if you haven't seen the movie, check it out. It's called, I think it's called Cristiada. It might have a different name when it was released, but it's got Andy Garcia in it, and it talks about the Cristeros War in Mexico. You got to watch it because it was an attack, and Mexicans were Catholics at the time, and the government basically attacked the Catholic Church and attacked all the Catholics, which is basically every Christian in Mexico. It was terrible. The same thing happened in Spain, okay, and the same thing happened in Nazi Germany and Soviet Russia and Communist China and Cambodia, and it's happening in Africa. So it can happen here. And you deciding that the government ought to make people good doesn't work. Now, there are certain things that we all agree on, even if it's not in the Judeo-Christian tradition, that government should legislate. For example, murder. Every normal nation in the history of man has outlawed murder. But guess what? Where are murder laws handled? Murder laws are handled at the state level. So that makes you understand that you are a sovereign of your state. The federal government has certain functions it should do, which it's not doing, and it has certain things it cannot do, which it is doing. And until you turn that around, nothing else will work. So you need to lock arms with Christian conservatives, traditional Republican conservatives, libertarian conservatives, libertarians, and even some Occupy Wall Street people and committed, honest liberal Democrats who also realize that the current, you know, Hillary Clinton, Obama, Reed machine is in no way, quote, liberal, okay? Because if we don't stop the tyranny now, none of us will have any quarter in the future. Now, you might not agree on everything, but agree on liberty. And then when you right the ship and bring this country back towards the Constitution, then you can have the battles on all the other issues. But if you're going to let those divide you now, then you're allowing the statist, corporatist enemy to win. If you dislike corporations, as you're protesting on Wall Street with your Starbucks coffee and your iPad, why do you keep supporting politicians who are owned by the corporations? If you're on the right and you like free market capitalism, why are you supporting politicians who keep eliminating competition in the marketplace by giving pledges to a very few corporations? It doesn't make any sense. So find the right enemy and find the right allies. And, you know, you don't have to agree on everything. Otherwise, you know, the whole thing is going down. And Rand Paul and Ted Cruz are talking about that right now. And instead of being distracted like Chris Wallace is, well, are you going to run or not run, blah, blah, blah. 2016 is a long time away. In Virginia and New Jersey, we've got elections this year. There's a special election in Massachusetts for John Kerry's seat this year. In 2014, you got all of the House and a third of the Senate, including Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. That's what you got to focus on. So you need to go to your Republican meetings, local meetings. You need to go to your Constitution Party local meetings. I mean, if Mitch McConnell is the Republican nominee for Senate, you need to defeat him by running another candidate. If you can't beat him in a primary, in a Republican primary, then you've got to defeat him by running another candidate from another party. I think you have a better chance beating him in a Republican primary, so get involved that way. Go to your local Tea Party, and if they happen to be a Mitt Romney, Karl Rove Tea Party, convince them that that's the wrong way to go and get them back on the right side. Okay, go to the Campaign for Liberty. Connect with Campaign for Liberty, Constitution Party, Libertarian Party, whatever local organization you have that is talking Constitution, go there, get involved, and make it happen. Don't focus on presidential elections until it's time to focus on presidential elections. The news media is trying to get you to focus on that now, and trying to put you in such fear of Obama that you will do anything the Republicans want you to do just because you want to stop Obama. Well, guess what? Obama is very easily stopped. That would be up to John Boehner and Mitch McConnell. They're not stopping him. They're giving him everything he wants. Newt Gingrich shut down the government to stop Bill Clinton. John Boehner is so for shutting down the government at the end of this week, he's going to give Obama everything he wants. That's the problem. He's the problem.
And he did. He did it for the last 2 years.
Point out, they talked about how during the government shutdown, oh, the Republicans got such a black eye back then, and Newt Gingrich became so unpopular, and the Republican Party became such a lightning rod that they, of course, got reelected. But that was such a bad thing. The Republican Party doesn't want to repeat this mistake. These are the words of wisdom of Karl Rove, that we would never want to shut down the government over this stuff. And if we do something like the sequester, that it's going to be bad for the Republican Party, and so we should buckle. That was the word coming in before the sequester came up. And then a bunch of people, they came to John Boehner, and they're like, look, if you don't hold firm on this sequester thing and cut this $85 billion, you're not going to be Speaker of the House. You're going to be ousted as Speaker of the House. We're going to find somebody else. And so they held firm on this thing. And you know what? The Democrats went with the old playbook, which is, you know, hey, now there's no White House tours. Now we don't have air traffic controllers. Everything that the American people visibly see, you know, the Blue Angels visibly see as parts of government that they like. We're going to eliminate that because that's all superfluous crap, right? But yet we find all this money to send to Egypt. We find money to send, you know, to help whatever, all sorts of foreign aid that I won't get into. But we also have a White House calligrapher. A set of calligraphers who hand, if you get an invitation to the White House, it's actually done by hand calligraphy by a bunch of people because you couldn't print this out, even though if you hand someone two pieces of paper, one which was done with hand calligraphy and one which was printed on a laser printer, you can't tell the difference. And the reason they said is that foreign governments would be so insulted if they got a laser printed copy of this calligraphy that they wouldn't attend the event. At which, by the way, we're giving them billions of dollars, they would not attend. So I would say, hey, that's a twofer. You cut out the calligraphy that you don't freaking need, and they don't show up for the meeting, and they refuse the billions of dollars of aid that you don't want to give them in the first place. This would be great. But this has backfired on the administration. So you can cut the budget. You can cut these sorts of things. And, you know, the idea that if you hold the line, and if you say that, hey, this government spending is out of control, that you're going to get all this negative press, I think is absolutely incorrect. And they're now starting to see that, hey, this is a popular thing. But this is one of the very reasons why when Gingrich announced his run for the presidency, that the GOP establishment was like, oh, no, we can't run Gingrich. His negatives are too high because he cut the budget and he shut down the government. Well, those were the things recommending him because right now that's what the American people want to see.
Yeah, they played that that so well. It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. You're absolutely right. But who's talking about budget? That Newt was talking about budget. And you know what? Let's be clear. Newt Gingrich, because revenue bills originate in the House, which means that the Speaker of the House really controls the purse. Okay? Newt Gingrich denied the purse to Bill Clinton until Clinton moved right. John Boehner is giving the purse to Obama. He's the one funding Obamacare. He's the one putting the Obamacare taxes in place. He's the one funding the wars. He's the one funding the welfare state. It's a Republican. So you Republicans out there, Boehner is the problem. And you Republicans in Ohio, I'm telling you right now, if you don't get rid of this guy in 2014, I say we nuke Ohio. So just get rid of him.
We will lose.
He's saying we need to move left. That's what Boehner's saying. We can't fight Obama. We need to move left. Gingrich is like, we can stop Bill Clinton by moving him right, and Boehner doesn't know what in the hell he's doing. Boehner is a disaster.
He's a useless piece of beef jerky, and if you want to hear someone speaking on the budget, this is the last clip, and then we're going to go into final thoughts because we are running long. But here's about 40 seconds, again, on Fox News with Chris Tweeb Wallace, Rand talking about the budget.
Paradigm. Just briefly, we got about 30 seconds left, though. I mean, your budget, which would balance the budget, your plan would balance the budget in 5 years. Paul Ryan's, which has come under attack for balancing it in 10 years, You've introduced it three consecutive years in the Senate. The most votes you ever got was this weekend when you got 18 of 100 senators. I mean, isn't that out of the mainstream?
Well, the thing is I think the legislature is about 10 years behind the public. For example, I've introduced amendments to quit sending money to Egypt and build bridges here in the United States instead of in Egypt. I'll bet you 90% of the American people agree with me, but 80% of my senators disagree with me. So I would argue the Senate is not up to date with what the people really want.
Wow, sorry about that.
I'll tell you what, if you listen to that man speak, and he has been he's been interviewed. Beck got him on the other day, a couple different times, but he got him on the other day and really dug into him and asked him a ton of questions. And he's like that all the time. People hit him with stuff, and he just turns it around and he explains himself. And you just go, duh. You know, he's speaking what people want. And I don't care if it was, you know, Joe Blow. It's not a Rand Paul issue for me. It's the content of what he's speaking. It's like what you say, you know, whether he runs in 2016 or not, that's another story. But right now, he's speaking to the hearts and minds of people who, if they will put their prejudices aside and listen to it and realize that this is essentially the flag of the Tea Party. This is what the Tea Party ran on. And what the movement came from, well, you know, a lot of people feel a lot of the Tea Party people folded, they capitulated, some of them got, you know, buried by Boehner and McCain and, you know, the boot on their neck and held them back. And it kind of kept them from, you know, from really finishing the revolution that we the people voted them in for in that very successful 2010 election across the country. You know, the states that had strong Republican control, 24 states, 30 of them have governors, 24 have control. They're changing those states. They're doing what the people hired them to do. And the only place it isn't happening is in that damn House, you know, where we have full control. We gave them the House, and then then those leaders that came out of the Bush era, you know, that overspending, five debt ceiling increases, $5 trillion in debt, the Patriot Act, that group, they're in power. They are not. They do not represent us. And what Rand Paul is saying is it isn't new. That's what's so kind of crazy about this. He's still speaking what he was hired and passing and trying to pass bills and throwing legislation on the table. You know, that budget, you heard Wallace. He said he's, you know, every year you reintroduce this budget. Well, yeah, because that's what he was hired to do. That is the flag of 2010, and we as a people need to get behind that. Forget the name. Just listen to the words. Go ahead, guys.
Well, he should point out that he got the Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, to vote for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I keep throwing it out. Now, look, I got Mitch McConnell's vote. What do you think about that?
Anyway, I think Mitch McConnell's next year. all right, guys, we're about to bring on home, so let me just do a little housekeeping. Thank you for listening and being with us as we had a show that went all over the place. But like I always say, liberty is messy, all right? Mm-hmm. And if you don't like getting messy, then you don't want liberty. If you don't want liberty, then I suggest you go to a place where they give you 3 square meals a day, 1 hour in the yard, and they shower you and do all sorts of stuff to you. It's called prison, okay? You'll have an ordered life. It won't be messy. You know, you might get sodomized inadvertently here and there, but other than that, for the most part, everything is ordered for you, and you don't have to actually think about too much. Everything's kind of laid out for you. But if you want to be
kind of like
free,
America.
Yeah, if you want to be free, okay, it's a little messy, and get uncomfortable, get out of your comfort zone. What we recommend you do, and look, if you share the show, if you share an MP3, you're not endorsing what we're saying, you're not endorsing our irreverent attitude, you're not endorsing the colorful metaphors we use not too infrequently. You're simply saying to somebody, check this out and think a little differently. And you might have to do a little different thinking yourself, okay? So click on the link that says download link, right-click on it, download an MP3. You can share it by email. You can send it out as a tweet. You can put it on Facebook or any of the other social media groups you're in, or burn a CD and give it to someone. Give it to strangers at Tea Party meetings or Campaign for Liberty or anything else. But the idea is that you got to build coalitions, and that's what we're trying to do here. That's what Chris is doing in Coalition of Freedom. And you got to share the information, and the best way to share information is personally, hand-to-hand, with people you know. And if they tell you, I'm not really all that into politics, well, politics is into you. It's into your toilet. It's into your light bulb. It's into your school. It's into your kids. It's into your car. It's into everything. So you've got to do something about it, because if you want to remain free, then you're going to have to fight the rising tide of corporatist tyranny that we're experiencing right now in the midst of this terrible financial collapse. Go to our Facebook page. It's the Tex and Rex Show on Facebook. Like the page, and you will get in your news feed broadcast times and updates of the show. And please share the show. It doesn't share itself. We don't have an advertising budget. We don't get paid to do this. In fact, it costs us money. You're the only means of us getting out there that there is. So if you're not sharing it, we're not growing. We'll probably still be here talking, but we'll just be talking amongst ourselves and not accomplishing anything. We really rely on you, and we thank all of you who've been sharing the show and posting it and getting other people interested. You don't have to agree with us. You don't have to like everything we say. You don't have to like Rand Paul. But you have to love liberty, and you have to get with other people who love liberty. So, gentlemen, we're 20 minutes in overtime, so let's bring it on home. Why don't we go ahead and go to Chris for some final thoughts, and then we'll go to Tex, and then I'll close it down.
No, I pretty much said my piece. I think it was a great show. Yeah, were we all over the place? No, I think we hit four or five really good points that were important. They're also the things that are a little bit of the news of the day, because Rand Paul is leading the charge on this, you know, whether it was the don't drone me, bro, you know, on your personal freedoms or CPAC or the immigration conversation or the debt ceiling. You know, those are key issues right now. I know that he's getting ready to be interviewed very in depth by Glenn Beck, whether you like Beck or not. He does good research, good shows, and he actually wants to sit down with Rand and give him an hour to rip apart his foreign policy and to get this thing put to bed, because everybody is speculating on his foreign policy. So it'll be very interesting, you know, kind of a little bit of a forenote on that. But I think it was a great show. You guys are awesome, and I totally agree. I mean, I you know, it's true. We're all talking to ourselves sometimes, and we need to grow, and we need more people listening. And the key, what you're saying, is it isn't about Rand Paul. It isn't about Republicans. It is about freedom. And I'm surprised that at the age I'm at now, I knew our country was going to hell in a handbasket years ago. I've been studying this most of my adult life because I grew up with a history sociology major mother, so it was embedded in me, and I knew this was coming. I didn't know we'd be having this conversation at this point in my life. I figured it was farther out. So it's serious stuff. And the sad part is people who should be fighting and moving forward and working together are fighting amongst themselves instead of working together. And it's amazing to see what happened with the Tea Party in 2010 and where we're at today and how hard it is to get people on the same page moving forward with the important issues versus the news of the day or you know, who somebody voted for, you know what I'm saying? And it's extremely important. Got to unify on the important factors. And then we can argue about the details later. We have to win first. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
Please check out Chris's group, Coalition of Freedom, on Facebook. It's very important. If you're not having conversations with people who think differently than you do about various things, you're dying in your comfort zone. But if you're not talking to people who love liberty and you're not spreading the message of liberty, especially to those who are not even aware, you got a problem. So thanks, Chris. And Tex, to you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think this last election really was an eye-opener for a lot of people, because 2008 could have gone either way. We all knew George Bush Jr. was very unpopular as a president going out of it, and so everyone was worried, would we be reelected or not, or would we get a follow-on Republican candidate anyway? or not. And we got Barack Obama, and everyone was very concerned about Obama coming in. But, you know, hey, the Tea Party showed up, and we fixed this thing, and we go into 2012, and okay, we're going to win. And we got betrayed by our own side. We got betrayed by the establishment wing. We got a rhino again. And in a way, thank goodness, I mean, it's tough to, you know, it's like taking your medicine. You know, nobody wants to take their medicine, but you got to do it from time to time. And we lost. But, you know, one total catastrophe like this is just what we need to get our act together, right? That's what they said in Monty Python's Life of Brian. But it's true. And so I think we can actually take a good hard look at where the conservative and libertarian movement is. As Ronald Reagan said, the natural home of the libertarian is in the Republican Party or on the conservative side these days. And so we can take a look at this and evaluate where we are and figure out who actually is on our side and who's been screwing us over and fix this thing so that we can go forward to victory. Because we need to be winning elections. We need to be winning this debate. We are very far along the liberal, socialist, progressive agenda, and it is about time that people start realizing where the country is headed and how we can fix it. Because there are people on the left who don't like this stuff. There are people on the left who don't like concentrated government. They're afraid of it, and you can form new coalitions with them using the libertarian door to bring them in, and we could fix this party. We could have a majority in the country, and we can turn this thing around. I mean, you can do it on a dime. Remember how it was in 92 when Clinton won, and he came in and they were doing all this liberal stuff that everyone hated. And then 94 came around, and you picked a real leader. We picked an actual leader at that time who turned Clinton around. All it takes is real leadership and finding the right person, and not people who are go-along-to-get-along types like Mitch McConnell and John Boehner, who are just a reed in the wind that will blow with whatever, you know, direction the winds are going and capitulate everything that they claim to believe in and capitulate the country and your ideas, what you want to see in government, to the opposition because they don't have the strength to stand up against them. Find those people and get rid of them. Put challengers up against them and get them out of office because they're not doing anybody any good. And this goes back to, you know, this concept of, well, recruit a moderate Democrat. Well, don't recruit a moderate Democrat, you know. Find conservatives that can win. Have the battles and fight it out because you need people in Congress who are going to stand up against this stuff and fight when the going gets rough as well. And they're going to be out there. And if they're the right person, they're going to be proposing stuff. They're going to be controversial, and they're going to be going out in front proposing stuff, creating waves, and not to go along to get along type. Because at this point, it's getting pretty late in the hour, and you can't go along to get along because the only place left to go along is towards state control, and we just can't have that here. So, Rex, I'll turn it back over to you.
Oh, nice shooting, Tex.
Well, I appreciate what you said, Tex, and I want you to, you know, everybody, go into the Tex and Rex Liberty Militia or on our Tex and Rex show page, and I have posted the voting results of Rand Paul's budget, so you can see the 18, or you can just Google it yourself, the 18 senators who voted for Rand Paul's balanced budget that saves you money and gets you out of debt. And you need to thank them because we need more of them. But the interesting thing is we also had an amendment to the budget that the Senate was working on to defund Obamacare, which is a tax. Obamacare is a tax, so it can be eliminated. And it is what's going to cause your health premiums to skyrocket or for you to lose them and end up with a single-payer system. It's going to be absolutely devastating if you think that people were overreacting to it before we read the bill. Now that it's getting implemented online, it is revealing itself to be the worst thing. Even liberals are starting to question some of the effects without ever actually taking responsibility for having passed this thing. But guess what? 20 Republicans voted to keep Obamacare going, full funding, okay? Then these are Alexander, Tennessee, Barrasso,
Wyoming, Blunt. Blunt is Missouri or Montana, I'm not sure. Bozeman, Arkansas. Chambliss, Georgia. Coates, Indiana. Cochran, Mississippi. Collins, Maine. Corker, Tennessee. Cornyn, Texas. Hatch, Utah. Hovind, North Dakota. Isaacson, Georgia. Johans, Nebraska. Mitch McConnell, Kentucky. Murkowski, Alaska. Sessions, Alabama. Shelby, Alabama. Thune, South Dakota. Wicker, Mississippi. These are Republican senators who voted to fund Obamacare. Make them feel the pain. I think we've got five or six of them are actually up for re-election in 2014. Fire their asses. Quit giving me this bullshit that Congress has a 9% approval rating. The only thing that has a lower approval rating is paramecium. But my guy's okay, so we're going to re-elect him. Don't do that unless your guy happens to be someone like Rand Paul or Ted Cruz, who are actually standing on principle, standing up for the Constitution, standing up for you. If you don't get involved, and if you're listening to the show, you're obviously interested in politics, you're involved. What I mean by getting involved is getting the rest of America involved. Share this show, share the information, and it isn't just about, you know, nice banter or winning an argument. Win their hearts and minds. Let them know how serious this is. Most people have a general feeling that something is wrong, okay, but they don't exactly know what it is, and they're told that the solutions that are being proposed by people like Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich and Rand Paul and Ted Cruz, they're just crazy. Well, then people run with that and they repeat it. Teach them to stop being parrots, and if you're parroting things, stop being a parrot yourself. Look it up. Don't take what someone – Rand Paul said such and such. Why don't you find out what Rand Paul actually said? Ted Cruz is an idiot. Really? Why don't you find out what he actually said, what he's actually done, how he's actually voted? Okay? Marco Rubio is a conservative. Really? What makes him conservative? The fact that he's more conservative than Charlie Crist? My left shoe is more conservative than Charlie Crist. That's not an accomplishment. So really look into these things and realize that if you don't have politicians who can actually be statesmen, who are fighting for liberty, who are standing up for the Constitution and for you, then you've got nothing. You've got nothing at all. Whatever your issue is, whether it's because you want to smoke pot or you want to save babies from abortion or you want to make sure that marriage is between a man and a woman or that you want to drive a green vehicle, whatever the hell your issue is, in liberty, in a true federalist structure with diffused power and a free market, you get to decide. In a tyranny, they get to decide. Now, if they happen to decide the way you like for now, don't get comfortable, because the next batch won't. They might decide the other way, but you've given them the power. So when you were complaining about George Bush and his drone policies, well, you reelected a guy now who is doing even worse. When you were silent about George Bush and his drone policies, now you got a guy doing the same thing, and maybe you're a little upset about it because it's him. Stop focusing on that. Start focusing on the real facts. It's tyranny versus liberty. And Rand Paul may or may not run in 2016. Nobody cares about that right now, other than the media, which is trying to distract you with this garbage. Rand Paul is a senator. He's in the middle of his term. He is doing the right things. He's standing up for liberty. He's not proposing radical ideas unless you happen to think guys like James Madison, George Washington, and Thomas Jefferson were radicals. And if you do, you're living in the wrong place, and you're our enemy. And if you like those guys, then you need to stand with Rand now. And I don't care if he does run in 2016 and you don't want to support him then. Fine, whatever. We'll worry about that later. But right now, you need to stand with Rand and Ted Cruz and guys like him. Let them know they're doing a good job and let your guy know that he'd better get on board with them or you're going to fire him and make sure everybody else knows. So do the work. And as we enter this week, which is a very holy week for most of the people in this country, this is Holy Week. It's the holiest time of the year. It's also Passover, so it's the same for people who practice the Jewish religion. Just understand something. Ultimately, what the human experience is about, it's about love. It's about taking care of each other. It's about providing each other with benefits and living life as we ought together in harmony. Now, it's never perfect because human beings are a fallen species and we screw things up. But in order to exercise those things and in order to be the person that you ought to be, in order to take care of those that you love, in order to share the things that you want to share, in order to trade the things you want to trade or set up the business that you want to set up and provide benefits to your customers, you need liberty. You need to be free. And if you don't like the way some people use their freedom, obviously if they step on somebody else's toes or rape people or rape children or kill people, then we have a system of justice to take care of that. But if you don't like the way that they're making the choices in their social life, then why don't you show them a better way instead of trying to legislate them a better way? Because that never works. People need to make their own choices and make their own mistakes, and you have to teach them the right way if you're following the right way yourself. And as we enter this week, we should all take a knee and pray that we can liberate ourselves from this tyranny and that we can get along with each other in liberty. This Friday is Good Friday, and it's Easter Sunday. Tex and Rex will be off the air this coming Sunday and will probably be coming to you on Monday. So please go to our Facebook page and like it, and we will post an update there as soon as we work out our schedule. It's time to live free as Americans, as our founding fathers handed it to us. So this is Tex and Rex signing off.
The flames of liberty will never die.
I also came with a message for the president, a message that is loud and clear, a message that doesn't mince words. Well, that's not exactly what I was thinking. However, I think he may have distilled my 13-hour speech into three words.